This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enterfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enterfood.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci.
Hey, good morning out there. This is Bubba DaVinci with Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. We are live every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we are glad to have our first hour sponsor, InnerHealth. InnerHealth Botanicals is the maker of the InnerFood Super Green Energy Drink. InnerFood is offering a 10% discount with the coupon code REDSHED. If you use it today, and we'll populate that up on our page. And InnerFood is a 100% organic, 100% vegetarian, vegan way to get immediate energy. It's caffeine-free, it's gluten-free, it's packed with vitamins, nutrients, and antioxidants, and each can contains 50 servings, that's 7 weeks' supply of organic greens, and that's less than a buck a day. So thanks to InnerHealth for covering our first hour. Today, we have Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, covering for Colorado Ron. Are you there, Amy?
Yes, I am. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Thank you for coming in. People don't know, but and we didn't mention it last week because we thought we'd scare everybody away, but Colorado Ron, he was having his wedding anniversary, and he asked if he could sneak away with his wife for the weekend, and I hear they have like a fantastic trip planned, and originally I thought I could do this by myself, and the powers that be jumped up and said call Amy because she'll be able to keep the show going without me, and I was like made me feel like a bad Bubba because I was like I can't do it by myself, but
you know what, I will just be your sidekick, you know, you just carry it on, and if you need me, I'm here. I'm not going to take over your show, my love.
Oh, that's fine. It's kind of funny. We have some fantastic guests today. And quite frankly, although they are fantastic and probably could carry the show by themselves, I'm a little intimidated by probably both of them. and so I'm glad to have you on board. We have Kellyn Bishop, who is the owner of PreparednessPro.com. And I like to joke around, and hopefully she'll forgive me for saying this, because I'm sure she's listening prior to her getting on. She's as infamous as she is famous. And
yes.
I have to say I'm a little bit intimidated. And when I say infamous, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I actually like people like her. You know, she is a person who speaks her mind. And she likes to make sure the information gets out there. She likes to put out her opinion. And if you're not strong-willed and can hold up your end of the conversation, you're probably going to get just run over. And
you don't know anybody. I just want to say one thing. You don't know anybody
sure.
on the other line like that either, do you? That
you
would
know,
be me. I admit it.
Yeah. You know, but see, here's the differences. And I've actually broke bread with Kellyn, and she's a wonderful person. I mean, you sit down with her, and she's very very intelligent and very friendly. And I don't think that she would intentionally do anything to say anything or to hurt anybody, but she is very, very much like you. And several of the women I've met in the self-reliance community, which is you guys are all very passionate about what you do.
Not only passionate, but strong-willed. We're very
right.
strong-minded. We have strong opinions, and we have no problem if somebody asks us or if we're, you know, just writing it ourselves to express ourselves. It's an openness to share our opinions with other people.
Yeah, and you know something, God bless all you guys for doing things like that, because look, the reason why we did this show to begin with was there were so many people out there saying this is the way it was and this is right, and there are a million formulas to success out there. You know, we always point out the example that Colorado Ron does live in Colorado, and he's a bourbonite. You know, his self-reliance regime has to do with, you know, living in a regular house in the suburbs and having his six kids and everything else. And here I am out in rural Iowa, where I just, before we started the show, ran across the street and let my chickens out. And, you know, neither one of us can necessarily have the right formula for everybody listening, because everybody's in a different situation. And if we didn't have people like you and Kellyn and Jackie Clay that were strong enough willed and passionate about what you do to go ahead and put the information out there, there would be a lot of people doing a lot of things the wrong way, because, you know, they'd be following one group's regime, you know, on how to properly do this stuff. Okay. So it looks like Amy dropped, so I'm going to keep on going. I apologize. So the second person that we have on the show today is Jason Akers. And I'm less intimidated by him like I am with our first guest, but I'm still intimidated. This is a gentleman who in 2009 lost his job, and instead of going out there and following the norm, decided that he was going to go out there and get into the preparedness industry, and, you know, launched his website, The Self-Sufficient Gardener, and does tips and podcasts and everything else. And he's kind of where I want to be. So, you know, my intimidation with dealing with Jason is more of a, you know, he makes me really look like a noob, because he's actually pulling off where I eventually want to be. Hopefully it won't show. So, are you back, Amy?
I am back. You know, we've had the craziest weather the past 12 hours. It has basically rained nonstop, and it's very stormy. So I apologize if we get lost sometimes, but I will call back. I promise.
Okay. Well, you know something. It's amazing. We're hitting storms. I was worried about us today too. Now everybody knows that we do this. You know. These shows are done live, and if And we're not, this isn't a professional studio setup, although I did buy a professional studio setup to kind of do it, and I can't figure it out. So I was on the phone with our producer, Steve, this morning going, does this work? Does this work? And he basically said, put everything back in the box, hook up your old stuff so we can get the show done, play with it later. Thank you, Steve, for being patient this morning. Yeah, and we're trying to make it more professional, but we're still subject to the weather.
That's right.
And in, you know, and it's kind of funny being when you go in this preparedness industry, you know, there's absolutely nothing that you can do to really. You still need the internet. You still need your power. And when one of those two things goes funky, you know, it is what it is, right?
That's right. We have no control over Mother Nature.
You know, but I will say, have you been following the weather reports? Because I'll tell you what, it's what happened to America? Because it used to be you get on the news, you turn on the news, you turn on your radio, and you hear your weather report. But now everything in the world has to be so sensationalism is like the motto for every news channel. You know, oh. I turned on this morning, and it was really funny. And the headline was life-threatening storm building through the Midwest.
Oh, really?
And I was just like, wow. I'm on weather.com or you know, the weather. It's actually the Weather Channel. So I got on weather.com, which is their channel, same headline. Yeah. And I click on it, and it's not like it's any sort of super storm or anything. It's just basically it's a big series of storms, and it says possible tornadoes. And I'm like, how is this different than any other year?
Right, since the beginning of time. I mean, give me a break. That's crazy. It's really this whole nutsy thing about you know, everyone thinking the world is going to end in 2012. And it's great if it makes you become aware that some other things could happen and become prepared. But when these news channels that really don't believe that you should prepare for anything start writing these life-threatening storms, they're just using it to get listeners. And that makes me crazy.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's just you look at this stuff and I'm kind of like, you know, it was just such a funny topic beyond belief. I mean, I really got up and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, because Ron and I talked about 2 weeks, I guess last week, being caught in those tornadoes, and to me, those are life threatening storms.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was uncommon for the simple reason that, you know, I don't think they'd ever had that many tornadoes in one area at one time ever.
Yeah, there was at one point they thought there were about six of them on the ground. I mean, it was pretty frightening.
Yeah, and so when you get up and then you actually see the headline being blasted on TV, you know, like I said, life threatening, big bold background with lightning bolts on the side on the image, the graphic image, life threatening storm build, and I was just like, wow, okay, yeah, this has got to be big, this has got to be massive. And then when I clicked on the button and I see what the actual list of storms were and everything else, I'm kind of like, okay, so I'm going to get some fog today and maybe some heavy rain and thunderstorms.
Just don't go driving in the fog because that could be life-threatening, you know. Are they going to have this title for every single weather event that we have from now on? Because, you know, our hurricanes can be pretty life-threatening. I mean, floods can be life-threatening. Fires. Is this going to be the start of everything they talk about from now on?
No. My guess is that there was some intern at the Weather Channel that was bored last night and decided that, you know, they needed to get a few extra numbers on there, and the way to do it was to, you know, put up this great graphic of lightning bolts and dark clouds and make the, you know, put the message life threatening storms build.
I know.
And more than likely, if everybody tuned in, you had to kind of check it out and went onto their website real quick, the kid probably got a raise or a promotion for driving that much traffic to it. So
there
you
go. Well, I just don't think – I think you have to be – it's like – you know what it is? It's Chicken Little saying the sky is falling. and he says it, and he says it, and he says it, and he says it. Eventually, people stop listening. So you have to be careful with your message and what emphasis you put on how major this one is that people prepare, because this happens with hurricanes down here.
Yeah.
And we had this major, Andrew came through, and everyone who lived here, we all know this can be really bad. But the people who moved here since Andrew, our hurricanes haven't been terribly severe. I mean, we've had roof damage and trees fall and yada, yada. But it wasn't a situation like Andrew. So people get complacent, and the news stations go on and on about the storm and all these preparations you have to do. And then, pretty much you could stand outside while the hurricane's passing, and it's just terribly windy and rainy and stormy. But, most likely nothing happened. So then the next storm. And so we have to be careful when we tell people something's life-threatening, because it seriously needs to be life-threatening, or it's just the next time you say it, they aren't going to listen.
Okay, well, that makes tons of sense, but I'm going to throw out for later thought at the end of the show. There could be a paradigm shift there also, because while some people would look at it like it could be like Chicken Little and the sky is falling, there's a whole other group that looks at it like the Nostradamus effect, which is you keep making predictions and eventually you're right. And then you can say, see,
I told you so.
Yeah, well, it always depends. It always depends. You know something? Even the clock's right twice a day. So, okay, we're going to go ahead and take a really quick break. We have Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, filling in for Colorado Ron. And when we come back from the break, we are honored, we are privileged, and I'm a little bit nervous. We will have Kelly Bishop from Prepared This Pro on live with us. So we'll talk to you guys in 2 minutes.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, meat eater, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standard for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1 year plus meat eaters units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Self-Reliance Exposed. I'm here with Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, and we have as our special guest, Kelleen Bishop. Are you there?
I sure am.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here. I haven't done this in a while. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah, I don't usually see this side of morning, but it's okay.
Well, we appreciate you being on. So I have I have a confession to make, and then I want to kind of throw something out there that most people may or may not realize. You used to actually be a show host on this station.
I was, yep.
Yeah, and you know.
And then television happened.
That's right. And then she became, you know, and it's kind of a good thing. People always ask, you know, it's like, well, what happens if a show host goes on to bigger and better things? And it's like, I think all of our goals are the same, which is to try to get the basics of self-reliance and preparedness into people's heads. And, you know, God bless you. You got lucky and you got some great opportunities that came your way and you took advantage of them and you are just blowing up. I mean,
well, actually I'm slimming down, but you know,
okay. I walked into that one. So,
Typical man.
Right. You know, I don't know if you heard prior to you coming on. You know, I was admitting.
Yeah, now we
know
why you were nervous.
I have to admit, you're about as almost as infamous as you are famous. And you know, I was lucky enough to meet you in Utah. And we had dinner together, and
yes.
You know. And then afterwards, I was kind of going around, and I did it with Colorado Ron. We both drove up there to do a meeting with the vendor, and we said, let's go meet with her. And we sat down, and we did, but we walked away, and we were like, why is everybody so afraid of her? You know, it's just she's such a pleasant woman. And then, I'll tell you what, I read a couple of your things, and I listened to a podcast that you did, and I think, and I started laughing, and I said, this woman doesn't pull any punches. And Ron and I are just start chatting on the phone and we were talking about bringing you to the show and everybody's like, well, you know, aren't you afraid that she'll say something or, you know, she won't pull any punches with you guys? And we're like, that's the whole, how do you educate if you don't create controversy? How do you educate if everybody thought and did the same thing, no one would ever learn. Right?
I really can't take the credit for creating the controversy. I'm just shedding light on it.
But you know something that you know, you should be, for a large degree, you should be appreciated and thanks that you're willing to, you know, if you believe that there's something that's not right, you call, use a term, you call bullshit on it. If it turns around and I've actually seen, well, you know something, I've looked at this product again and, you know, here's my opinion. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're closed-minded. It's just you want people to go out there and stand up to the challenge and, you know, put their money where their mouth is, so to speak.
And another thing, too, that I'm cautious with, I think we can all agree, especially you, Nurse Amy, that there's so many, you know, old wives' tales out there. There's so many misunderstandings out there. And one thing I won't state on is something that I haven't really researched. I mean, everybody asks me, well, do you have a link for that information? I'm like, no, I went to the library. It's called a book. or I interviewed so-and-so. But one of the things, too, where I'll get stuck in a corner, I'm like, I can't make a comment on that. I can't condone that. For example, a lot of people have been asking me about fish antibiotics and antibiotics for pets and stuff like that. And I'm just, with what I know in terms of how the USDA is allowed to, you know, to allow what the USDA allows in the food for animals, for cattle, et cetera, I just didn't have much faith in that. I'm like, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. People are a little frustrated with me.
Forward them to us. We've done tons of research. We can answer all those questions, promise.
Well, Nurse Amy, I'd love to hear what you had to say. The interesting thing is as I was on the phone with the doctor last night, actually, we had an appointment, we were speaking, and I said, you know what, I got to start tackling this particular topic because I'm getting pushed on it. People want to know answers, and I said, I'm not comfortable with it. And he shed a lot of light on it. I don't know if you'll have the same opinion, but he said it's kind of like, you know, your Wonder Bread outlet store, that they do allow imperfections and such in those medications. And as such, people can do them, but, I mean, you can compromise the integrity of your body and how your cells operate, et cetera. But anyway, it's very enlightening, and I'm willing to actually do more research to write an article on. But that's another thing, too, Bubba, is I won't put myself out there unless I know it's accurate, because that's what I want people to be able to know that they can rely on.
Right.
But we need to have this conversation because it's going to be a long one, Kaylee. We've done a ton of research. And I will say one thing with regards to what this man, this doctor said. And as far as the fish antibiotics, he is not correct. They are made from the same batches of the same manufacturer. Some of them go to the fish antibiotic little labeling, bottling area, and the other ones go to your Walmart. But they have the same labels. They have, they're in the same capsules. They're the same medicine. And as far as, again, the fish antibiotics, we have spoken to a lot of people in that industry. We've spoken to pharmacies, and they assure us it's the same thing. So,
well, I'll have to definitely interview you and get my research done. I'm not comfortable yet, but at least I'm willing to, you know, to pursue it now.
Absolutely. And like I said, after the show, I'm so happy, you know, when at your convenience, let's chat about this because, like I
yeah,
said,
I'd like to.
Bones and I have spent, I mean, really years, honestly, because we have raised fish for 15 years together, and he was raising fish in the 70s. So we've had these antibiotics around us, so we have a lot of experience.
Really? That's really interesting. I mean, whether there's that solution, I know there's a lot more. That's great. I'm glad we talked.
Well, no, we're supposed to be interviewing you.
Now we know why Bubba was scared.
That's right. I was able to go get a cup of coffee while you guys were just that fish.
God, you get two people who want to pick each other's brains, and I want to ask her questions. And you're never going to get a word in edgewise, dude.
That's okay. I'm used to it. I'm married.
Oh, ouch.
Scott, I will let you ask a question, my love.
Oh, that's okay. But, you know, actually, what you guys just did is prove a point. Yeah, and you know, this is very exciting for me, and I speak for Colorado Ron, and this is actually kind of the reason why we are honored that you know, both of you ladies will be on stage with us in May in Colorado Springs, because, you know, there is so much information out there, and Lord knows that each one of you have the ability to probably speak on a wide range of topics, but obviously do your research and everything else. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that even if you have two people that have completely different sides of the coin, there's each one of them is probably spouting a little bit of truth, depending on
absolutely.
It's a paradigm, right? It all depends on exactly what you're studying and how you're looking at it. And, you know, you could argue that GMO is bad and everything else, but someone on the other side could say, well, it's better than someone starving to death. You know, it all depends on how you look at it.
Really? Somebody could say that?
I would disagree with that too.
We'll tap on down there, Sammy. We'll get him on this one.
I won't say what I would do the Monsanto building, but I'll keep my mouth shut.
We could be on the terrorist watch list. Don't do that. So anyway.
I love them.
Yeah. The point of it is that our job is to get as much information out there and let the audience decide on what's going on. And these debates are awesome. You know, I like when we get get people that are, like I said, passionate about what they do and get them out there and just let the information flow, because, you know, that's how major discoveries are made. That's how people get that big, oh, I didn't get that, and it changes lives. From the passion and from, you know, hearing the different information and something that typically strikes a chord. And on that topic, you know, we have we're being lucky, and Kellyn, you guys, you're doing something very new, and you guys, we were on Doomsday Preppers, and you had a couple different things going on, and we asked you to come and speak about self-defense, women in self-defense, you know, for being self-reliant. And you are not only going to come and speak on the topic, but you're going to come and do some classes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're going to do some really hands-on classes. This is not going to be people sitting in a chair. We're going to be upright. But it's what I call my rape prevention class for couch potatoes. And the reason I call it that is because anytime somebody says self-defense, myself included, before I, you know, got where I am, you assume that there's arduous physical energy that you have to exert. What I'm showing you is real life street smart kind of maneuvers where you do not have to be strong. You do not have to have, you know, this fabulous resting pulse rate. I want to give everyone a chance. I am 5'2.5", so I'm incredibly under tall. I am overweight, and I am out of shape. Case in point, I started Krav Maga classes this week. I have never been the worst at anything. This is definitely a hit to my ego this week. when this big, tough military, you know, former military, I mean, he's just as tough and mean as they come. You know, he starts barking orders, and, you know, give me push-ups and all that. I'm like, yeah, I'll just stand here and, you know, barf or try to catch my breath. Anyway, my point is I want every single woman in America to feel like she has a chance so that she doesn't have to feel, especially the single moms who are carrying it all on their own, they are the protector for themselves and their kids. I want every single woman in America to feel like they have a fighting chance. I am sick and tired of this stigma that the bad guys have, that the woman is the easy target. I want to help women to not paint themselves that way and to use leverage and sound principles, easy principles that they can remember even in this climatic scenario, that they can truly defend themselves and, you know, move on to be what they're here for.
Well, I have to say that although that sounds very exciting, I think men all over America just quivered because they're just thinking like...
Good. And you know what? If we can have all of the moms learn these things, guess what? They're going to teach their daughters. And they're going to teach their daughters. And it becomes a whole system of the way we teach our daughters to take care of themselves and to be strong and to learn these maneuvers from very little. And so that, you know, when they're young teenagers, before they've become adults, they know how to handle themselves too. Because they can be victims just as much as women. And we need to make sure that our daughters are protected. I have two daughters. And I feel very strongly about what you're doing, and thank you so much.
Well, I fortunately, I haven't ever had to deal with this in a violent way. You know, there's always other ways that people get tortured or abused or traumatized in their life. That wasn't one of the things that I have had. But I do know how vulnerable my mom was, raising five kids by herself, you know, being completely exhausted. And being subjected to crime. I have a half-sister who had the bleeping, blazing, you know, jeebies beat out of her. And she was a longtime Taibo and self-defense student. She was so frustrated in the aftermath. She said, I don't understand it. I know I made contact with him. I know I punched back, but he just kept coming. I don't want to see this happen in anybody I know, because when I shake somebody's hand and I look them in the eye, I'm going to start worrying about that person for the rest of my life. So darn it, I've got to at least do what I can to make sure that they're not in that position. I'm just tired of it.
So I want to look at this from two different perspectives. And like I said, forgive us, Kelly, because our show, we always joke around, it's like sitting around on your front porch with a glass of wine or, you know, something to drink and just kind of chatting back and forth. We go around rabbit holes all the time and kind of see where it's going. And so, you know, from a dad's perspective, I've got three little girls. And when we started getting into self-reliance and started, you start reading the normal books, you know, Patriot, which probably everybody that's listening and, you know, most people have read, or One
Second
After.
And if they have it, let's at least tell them it's required homework, okay?
It is, right. It's definitely a good first step. So is, you know, One Second After. I could list the books that you should have on your bookshelf. But, you know, one of the first things my wife and I always talked about is, you know, I'm ex-military. You know, I've been trained. I've done a lot of things. We carry guns. My wife is a concealed carry. You know, she's fairly confident with herself and traveled around the world. But all those books always press home what happens to the children. And, you know, it's like, you know, in every book there's that one portion, one paragraph or the one chapter where it's like, you know, these people do terrible things to kids. And that's, you know, the problem is, as I travel around the world, I always tell people that's not sensationalism. That's real. You know, the first, almost always the first victims, whether it was when I was in South Africa or I was in Croatia or Turkey or even China or wherever I go, the first victims are always the children. And it's because they are so much weaker and unprepared for everybody. And it always brings a tear to my wife's and my eyes. Like, you know, if anything ever went bad, you know, for we can rationalize why things happened to us and how we got ourselves into the situation. Kids not only can't rationalize why it's happening to them, why someone wants to hurt them, but they have really no way to prepare themselves. And little girls are even worse.
And even worse, it's an interesting thing with kids, because as kids are getting raised, they are in this psychological pattern. When I do good, I get rewarded, I get praised. When I do bad, I get yelled at, punished, time out, what have you. I mean, it starts from a very young age. The problem is when something bad happens in a child's life, and rape and other forms of sexual assault are happening commonly from the ages of 11 to 17 with girls. It's absolutely, you wouldn't even believe the numbers. It's absolutely horrific. The problem is, though, is because of how they've psychologically been raised, which is, it's a good way to, for us to raise our kids, but it backfires when something really bad happens to them. They carry that. They beat themselves up with it. I did something wrong. Now, here's one of the reasons why I really want to target the moms is you have so many moms who I've talked to, and I'm sure I'm not the only one out there who's in this industry that doesn't hear this as well, but the moms will say, you know, I don't want to risk the life of my children by fighting back. There's a home invasion, and of course, you know, for example, you know this, Bubba, if a bad guy were to come into your home, and this is good that your wife carries a firearm because she's got the advantage, but if a bad guy were to come into your home, he's going to look at your family, and what's he going to automatically assume? He's going to assume that the wife is the best leverage, because your kids will have to, you know, watch her getting the crap beat out of her. You'll do anything just to not have her hit. And, I mean, they just assume that that's the target, but it's also an emotional leverage. So, unfortunately, women don't have that element of surprise. They don't feel equipped for that. But they're also afraid to fight back, especially when they're by themselves in front of their kids, because they don't want to scar their kids that way. And I've had to ask women and say, okay, let's talk turkey here. This is one of those pull no punches kind of thing. Let's talk turkey here. Which would you prefer, especially if it's the issue of firearms in the house, which would you prefer? You prefer that your child watch that happen to you and be screwed up for the rest of their life? Or would you prefer to send the message to them, fight back, this isn't okay under any circumstances? And even better, empower your kids so that if anything like that ever happens to them, they are allowed to fight back. That's the biggest thing about what I teach, is that mental processing. You are allowed to fight back to the nth degree.
Right. Well, and I think that's a very accurate statement, because it's you know, when we worry about the girls and everything else, it's kind of going into the second topic I was going into, which is, you know, people who generally, I'm not talking about all the time, because you definitely have some people out there that, you know, that feed on different things, but people in general take the path of least resistance, including bad guys. No one wants to have something take long, you know, to have a bigger fight than they necessarily need to. And me, even as a guy, you know, I've had the snot beat out of me more times than I care to admit. You know, going into fights, and, you know, one of the first thing our first sergeant taught me, you know, when I was in the service was, you know, winning's always great, but the bigger thing is inflicting enough damage that they don't want to come back again. And so, you know, giving up or being an easy target, you know, if you fight back, they're more likely to go find an easier target than they are if you're willing to go ahead and take a beating and fight back.
You're absolutely right.
And I think that's what is going to be an important point for when you're doing your classes there. It's don't be a victim. You know, victims are attacked over and over and over again. You know, people who do harm can sense that in someone that's already defeated and everything else. They'd rather go find someone else, easier prey, if they can sense that you're willing to put up a little bit of a fight.
Right. And actually, Scott, if I can make a brief comment here, is, and I'm sure you address this, Kaylin, in your classes, but for me, a lot of teaching my children is something I learned when I was a kid, is that you carry yourself with confidence. You look people directly in the eye if you think that they could be a threat. You turn around when you're walking out to the car and you look around. And I do this consistently, and I have my children trained. When you leave a grocery store or a mall, halfway to your car, stop and look around. It takes 2 seconds. If somebody's following you that you feel uncomfortable, walk back inside. Do not continue to your car. If you get a gut feeling, and use your senses, but make sure you have awareness of your surroundings. A lot of people are so focused on their groceries, getting their keys out of their purse, they're not paying attention. If you just take that 1 second to just stop, look around, if you feel uncomfortable, go back inside.
I agree with that. In fact, Scott, I mean, you've had enough background, you big tough self that you are. Yeah, you've had enough background that you know one of your best assets is the element of surprise. And one of the things that I always teach women or men, they need to appreciate this as well, but particularly women, their greatest asset is their element of surprise, that they will explode, that they will fight back. And they're not, their assailant is not anticipating that. Now think about that for a second. How would you feel if you were walking around your whole life every day and you had this awesome secret weapon that you knew percentage-wise, science-right, history tells you that it's going to give you the upper hand, then naturally you are going to walk around more confident and you will not be a victim. I keep telling people there are no victims, there are only volunteers. And, yep. You know, I want to influence these women so they stop volunteering to be somebody's target.
There you go.
Let's touch on this one last time so then we can move on to the next topic. So what the class that you're doing will be, rape prevention for couch potatoes. Now, we are actually going to have a section set up at the event with pads and everything else because we're also doing hand-to-hand combat with the Apache, with Snake Blocker, who's an Apache knife fighter.
Awesome.
And we're gonna rotate those sessions in the same area. Will you be charging for this? Are you going to be setting up a registration on your website? Would you like us to set it up on our website? How are you doing this with the women?
You know what? I think we should. I'm going to charge for it, but I'm going to call it a donation. It's going to be a $5 donation, and the reason why I charge for that is because there are a lot of women who are at the at special housing right now. They're trying to break away from an abusive relationship. And we always use these donations for this class. We always use these donations to make sure that we can go in there, you know, rent the pads and everything to make their environment that they're comfortable in right now a suitable environment for us to help train the women that are really going through the trenches and they're really having a tough time. We want to bring that to them.
Okay, so $5. We're going to do $5 registration. We'll get the registration information up to everybody next week, so that way you can sign up.
Great.
I believe so much in this. I'm going to sign my daughters and wife up for the class, but I will personally donate. If you go ahead and contact Kellyanne on her website, and we'll give her website at the end of the show. If you want to come to this class and you're in the Colorado Springs area and you just don't have the money to participate in the class, I will go ahead and cover 20 people for the $5 entry fee to her class if you write her and you have a reason why you want to attend and you can't afford to do it. Because I believe in what she's doing, and I believe this is a worthwhile thing for all women and little girls to learn. So if we can help out, that's from Bubba Da Vinci, we'll all cover 20 people joining the class.
Awesome.
And
I'll match you.
Okay, so now we've got 40. So
yep.
Guys,
woo-hoo!
do not use the excuse that you can't afford to do this. This is something that every little girl or woman should come over and at least learn some basics.
Sorry.
Because you need to be able to take care of yourself. We believe in you, and we believe that that everybody should have this opportunity. So
absolutely.
There we go.
Awesome.
That is wonderful.
Awesome.
Now let's talk about another great thing. You're giving away for very little is having people write to you and providing a contest and giving away some super awesome prizes. Tell
you know,
me a little bit about that.
It's so awesome. I'm so glad I get to talk about this. Thank you so much. Well, as you mentioned before, I was on this, you know, this television show, and in all, just being completely frank, I think that they did a good job overall in this television show. There are occasions, though, where we see the drunk Uncle Harry character that are, you know, we're all embarrassed about. Part of that's editing, and part of that is, you know, there's a loon in every family. and there's been some good, there's been a lot of good that's come out of this television show and other shows like it. Some people are at least starting to think, and in my opinion, if their mind's not open to self-reliance, you know, this show's not going to do anything anyway. But if their mind is there, then they're going to start to see some things that they can learn. Well, what I wanted to have happen, though, in doing this show without any barriers is I wanted to, I was hoping that real people, normal people, as normal as you are, Bubba and Amy, okay, could reach out and in the voice that meshed with someone could tell their story and say, you know what, this is where I am in my self-reliance efforts. This is how I felt when I first, you know, my husband first started talking to me about self-reliance. Or it can go the other way around, where she's the closet prepper and, you know, he's opposed. I wanted more voices out there besides mine. I wanted regular, everyday people that I get to meet all the time to just tell their story. And we have nearly 100 entries so far, and these entries are absolutely amazing. You'll have some honest to goodness that will make you cry. Maybe not you, Bubba, but, you know, normal people, they would cry.
and
you have some that will make you giggle. And, I mean, there was one, and it had to be the longest one anyone has ever given. I mean, I think it was 5 typed pages. But I got to tell you, as I was reading it, proofing it, editing, I didn't want it to stop. I mean, I was hoping it was going to be an entire book. And I mean, this person is going to get my own personal vote because I just thought it was awesome. But anyway, so we're taking these entries through April 16th at midnight. That's when all the entries stop. And what's happening, I'm posting them up on the website, Preparedness Pro. In fact, they'll see a tab that says Preppers Contest Entries. This is called the Preppers Outreach Contest. And you'll see this litany of entries. Some people are writing. We've got a family that did this absolutely cute little video. I just love how they got their kids involved and everything. When the people write, all I'm doing is putting their initials in the state they live in so they can rename anonymous. We don't have to violate any OPSEC, you know, that we've worked so hard to create. And in return, we got some amazing vendors who said, you know what, I love what you're doing. We're willing to put our money where our mouth is and support you. Backwoods Homes Magazine, for example, is giving a 1-year subscription. And here's the cool thing. We're going to have our audience vote on these people, and they vote simply by making a comment. They get 5 votes. They can vote all for one person, or they can spread it out over the various entries. And then whoever has the most votes gets to pick their prize first. And we have 37 prizes for them to choose from. One of your sponsors, you know, the Global Sun Oven, they're giving away an entire, you know, the Sun Oven with, you know, bells and whistles. And then they also have another package they're rewarding, which is a dehydrator package. Berkey is giving us one of their big Berkeys. And they're rewarding 2 other prizes in the sports bottles with the filter device. I mean, there's just so many fabulous prizes. There's a year's supply of fabulous seeds. And, of course, since it's heirloom, non-hybrid, that's a lifetime supply if you do it right. There's, you know, 40 storage buckets. There's herbal applications. I mean, these prizes are amazing. Everything from $500 prizes down to, you know, someone's amazing book that they've written. So a lot of vendors have really stuck their neck out there and said, we're going to do this. We're going to support you. And we've got some great entries. I encourage everybody. It doesn't have to be 5 pages, and I don't think I can handle that. you know, some people have just given me 5 lines, and it's just been really amazing to read some of these entries. I mean, I got to tell you about some of these entries. They're just awesome. This one, most recent one that I remember reading is this person tracked their heritage, not just genealogy, but the people that they knew, that their folks talked about and their folks' folks talked about, et cetera, tracked it all the way back to a year before the Mayflower landed. And if you know anything about history, you know that the people who came over on the Mayflower, I mean, they were not ready for this rugged environment. Talk about survivalist, you know, prepping. But this guy was a year before when the Mayflower. And this gal's history goes back like that with stellar people. In fact, her mom had to be on the road 6 months at a time with her dad. He had to go where the crops were, I believe, if I recall the story correctly. And so this contestant says, you know, my mom had to prep for 6 months twice a year in a 39 Plymouth. So, I mean, it's just these stories are very, very inspiring. And like I said, there's some just absolutely cute. There's a gal who was a single mom to 9 kids. and still did some amazing, you know, jaw-dropping worthy things in order to make sure that she was self-employed, or excuse me, self-sufficient and self-employed. there's just anything. There's the low level of, hey, this is where I'm starting. This is the mentality that I have. Some people are really doing a good job at talking common sense and saying, you know, hey, this is just insurance. I pay money on life insurance and homeowners insurance. This is just insurance. When I was interviewed by Fox and Friends, I guess it was last month, they asked me, well, isn't this just extreme behavior? And I said, well, we don't look at Donald Trump and Warren Buffett as being extreme with all the money that they, you know, they have. In fact, we kind of have a little respect for them, maybe even a little envy. Well, I'm doing the exact same thing as they are. I'm just using a different currency for my retirement or for my future or for the what if. I mean, that's why people have money, right, is the what if. Or what if I decide I want a new boat? Or what if I have to bail a kid out? So this, just the entries alone are just fabulous. But these prizes are absolutely amazing. And there's several of our vendors who've said, you know what, we don't want anybody to go away with nothing. So we've got a couple of surprises prepared, too, just for people entering, which I'm pretty excited about.
Well, if you end up getting, we posted this up on our Facebook, we posted it up on Twitter, we posted it up on our contest site, and we will keep promoting it over the next, because it's only another day and a half until it's over. But if you end up getting more entries than you have prizes, let us know too, because we'll throw in some T-shirts, self-aligned T-shirts to go ahead and help cover some of the people.
That's awesome. Thank you.
These are wonderful ideas, Kelly. And this is one of the things I like about you and what you're kind of going forth and doing, which is you're making sure that you're spreading the word, not always by saying, here's what I think, but you know, in this fashion, you're allowing other people to tell their stories that, well, maybe if one of your stories that you collect out of 100 hits one additional person and gets them into the lifestyle, then it's been, in my opinion, it's completely worth it.
I 100% agree. Let me ask you guys a question. I want you to be completely frank here. But
sure.
Bubba and Nurse Amy, have you ever received an email or a call or something of that nature from a person and have them say, thank you very much, you've changed my life, we've started doing this now, and you know it was a better path for them? Has that ever happened to you before?
Not to me personally. I've had somebody say the exact opposite, saying I've ruined their life. But
we're not going to bring up
You're
ex-wives,
hilarious.
Are we? No, I'm just kidding.
All right, Bubba. I don't believe. I'm sure there are people who have approached you, but I have to say that, yes, Bones or Joe and I, we get those all the time. And it warms your heart. It makes you work even harder. It makes me get up 5 minutes earlier and go to sleep 5 minutes later every day because of the people who show that appreciation for the efforts that we're putting in. And I'm sure it does the same thing for you. It just really makes you feel like you're doing something wonderful.
Well, here's my point. My reason for asking that question is the fact of the matter is one person's life, the ripple effect of one person's life becoming stronger, changing, having them avoid one less curveball, you know, debilitating curveball.
Yep.
That's what this is about, and that's why I've been doing this. There's over 500 articles I've written on our website, preparednesspro.com, and I've been doing that for free. I mean, we just barely started allowing Google ads, you know, on our site. I've been doing that for free for 3 years. I've been teaching classes most of the time for free. Every once, if it's a commercial class, you know, then I want them to compensate my time and effort. But we've been doing this for a long time because those letters are worth everything to me. When I hear that one person, and you know what, just like Bubba was saying, I get the garbage. I get the hate mail. You know, I literally had one a couple weeks ago, you know, was slew of, you know, F-bombs and I hope you die and all this kind of garbage, you know. But that's okay because you get that one. And here's the cool thing. This is happening in this contest. I am seeing comments posted with people saying, I get it now. We're going to move forward. I've received emails saying, hey, post number 37 changed my life. Thank you so much for doing this. And you know what? That's worth it. I mean, how could we sit on our duffs and not do something when we know that a person's life could change? So to me, it makes it all worth it.
Well, Go ahead, Amy.
I was just going to say, and each person that becomes prepared or enters the preparedness community, it just makes our community stronger, and it gives more options for people to rely on each other. I would love for all of my neighbors to be prepared. I want a community. I want our city. I want all of South Florida. I want everyone in the world to be prepared. And so each person that we help can go out and tell two other people and two other people, just like that shampoo commercial I saw in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of spider effect.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm a little bit different, you know, just to kind of throw out. When we decided to do the radio show, we started on with an hour on Friday nights, and I didn't think anybody would listen to that. And we started getting people populating and sending us little emails saying, hey, it's good to hear a show that people admit that they don't know what they don't know and are willing to kind of talk with other people to kind of help us figure things out and that aren't a giant infomercial. And
yeah.
You know, we went from that to doing a little bit longer of a show to me taking a chance and talking to my partner, Colorado Ron, and saying, okay, let's really test the waters. Let's move from Friday prime time to Saturday morning and see, and we're going to stretch it from a one-hour show to a three-hour show and see if people will listen. And our numbers have just continued to grow. And when I pop up on Facebook and say, I'm not sure what we're doing right, the point that they keep throwing up there is, that's the point is, you're not always trying to prove what you're doing right. You're just telling us what you're doing and then letting us know what we can do different.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And you know, I'm not changing lives, but I feel like I'm getting out there and allowing people not to make the same mistakes I did and spend the money that I did a year ago when I started getting into this. And that feels good.
I think you're just out of tune with your feminine side, Bubba. I think you are changing lives.
Out of tune with my feminine side. Okay, on that note, guys, it's time to take a break. And we'll come back in 2 minutes after I go and have a cup of coffee and try to figure out what my response to that is. And we'll finish up with Kelly Bishop and Nurse Amy. So
take
we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Pill.
Go away.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com. for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubbet Da Vinci, losing testosterone every few minutes that we're having this conversation. And we're back with Kelly Bishop from PreparedNessPro.com. How are you doing?
I'm just fabulous. This has been fun.
Yeah, they can't see me in the host queue.
Oh, hey, Colorado Ron, I heard you were popping in for a second.
How's it going?
Hey, thank you for popping on for a second. Between nursing and adrenaline, my estrogen level has gone up and my testosterone level has plummeted. So.
I could hear that. That's why I was calling in. Reinforcement.
So where are you
at? Real
now?
Quick, I've got to say something before I forget, because I on this last commercial that you had, Wonder Mill is also one of the sponsors of this contest. They're giving away their premium, you know, cream of the crop, hand mill. And I just can't believe the generosity of these folks that are enticing people. I mean, it would be nice if people would just enter the contest just because they want to get their voice out there. But you know, these guys have really stepped in and they're enticing people to do this. And I just think it's fabulous because you know they'll walk away with something that'll help them become more self-reliant as well.
That's wonderful. So I was kind of going down this list of people of the sponsors who are doing this and offering prizes, and it's kind of the who's who of the preparedness industry.
Exactly.
I mean, you have InnerHealth, who's one of our sponsors, InnerHealth Botanicals that's there, Sunoven, who's one of our sponsors, Tattlers, who comes to all of our events, Berkey Guy, who comes to all of our events. Wonder Mill, basically Stove Tech. I mean, I could go down this list and it basically looks like one of our self-reliance events.
Yeah. These guys are awesome too. And they were like, I was asking for just a little bit and they're like, nah, I'll give you all of this.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, prize number 24, hands down, awesome. If you guys get a chance to choose two number 10 cans of Grandma's powdered milk, awesome. Love the powdered milk. Grandma, you got to send cookies with it, though.
Powdered
milk and cookies? Dude,
right.
You have been hanging out with it.
I was proving the point. I'm going to the light side.
Well, first of all, I have two things I wanted to say. Amy,
sure.
You're way too soft on Bubba. You got to slap this guy around every Saturday. That's a rule. That's a rule. You got to beat on him.
Well, you don't think the estrogen level dropping is enough? Come on, you want to beat on me? I'll be in Kelly's class, you know, as one of those battered women.
Well,
no, I would actually like to volunteer as my punching bag, Bubba.
That's a perfect segue. The second, Colleen, I will donate double of what Bubba did if you can get the women to beat the living snot out of Bubba.
I want one of those really big padded suits that you see them wearing and then everybody just
Hey, Amy, we don't do the padded suits. You see, usually I use my husband, but I'm going to have to use Bubba. We'll have to practice a little bit and I'll have to make sure I don't hurt him.
Oh, hurt him. I want him crying.
All right, you heard it live from Colorado Ron. If I volunteer to be the demonstrator or the demonstrating dummy, he will go ahead and volunteer $200. Just so you know, we also have our producer that said he'll put in $100, and we have another person that says they'll put in $100.
I think we're up to like $500.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Right. This is going to help so many women. You guys just don't. When we are done, you know, yes, they're going to remember the physical aspect, but when we're done, their brain changes, their mind changes, and they're like, wait a minute, why didn't I see this before? I can do this. And it's just amazing. Having grown up with, you know, a single mom for the most part, And I say that. She was married 5 times, but it just didn't, it rarely stuck. She worked hard to raise us kids, and she was definitely vulnerable in so many instances. And having people in my family and having friends go through this, this just means so much to me. I'm so grateful you guys are jumping on board.
Well, we're happy to do it. Ron, go back to your wife. It's your anniversary. Happy anniversary, my friend.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks, guys. You guys take care, and don't give Bubba any slack. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. So that was Colorado Ron volunteering me. Actually, he didn't volunteer me. He basically put up a $200. Now, how can I back down?
He put a bounty on your head, dude.
Oh, yes, it's a bounty.
That is good. So you've heard it here first. You've heard it here now. I will be the practice dummy for this session. So that allows 40 more women that potentially need to come and take this class for free. And
absolutely.
We're honored to do it. We will put up a PayPal account at the end of the day. Thank you for Steve for putting up 100, Amy for putting up 100, Colorado Ron for volunteering me so he could put up 200.
We're up to 500. That's 100 people.
That's right. Yeah, that's 100 women that can come and take the class that need to take the class.
Amazing.
We will make sure we get this information out to everybody in the registration so you can do so. So
fabulous.
Before the day gets away from us, I want to kind of get into something. I don't know how much I can get out of you. You've kind of become a little bit of a media sensation. I mean, there's Survival Mom, Lisa Bedford, who's done a lot of stuff. There's a lot of groups that have gone out there. But, since I've met you, you've been on National Geographic. You've been on ABC. You've been on Fox and Friends. You've been on with Cooper Anderson. I hear you got some more stuff in the mix. I don't know how much you can talk about or nothing else. How do you feel about getting all this media attention and the spin that each one of them kind of put on the preparedness lifestyle when they talk to you?
I have to say I am a little bit surprised. I'm like, really? You couldn't have asked me to be on TV when I was a size 8? I'm like, you had to wait till now. Okay. I have never been happier. 3 years ago, or just actually almost 4 years now, my husband and I hit rock bottom financially. We had to close our business. We had to declare bankruptcy. I mean, just things were crap. And we were doing the hoity-toity business. We're doing international finance and commercial finance. And so we were sitting in our front room going, okay, we can't drop any further. So what do you really, really, really want to do? And I said, what I'm really passionate about is preparedness. And the whole Women of Caliber and teaching women firearm and physical self-defense, that's simply a component of preparedness. And I said, if I could do anything, that's what I would do. And my husband, of course, had his couple of things that he wanted to do, and we decided that's what we were going to do. And I don't know how it's happened, but I've actually been able to, make a living at this, keep my head above water, and I've never, ever been happier. And if more people are willing to hear that message, as flawed as it may be, but if more people are willing to hear that message, then I'm just tickled pink.
Well, that's really good. But here's one of the things, I kind of went through and rewatched everything last night to kind of, be familiar with it before we talk to you. And when you and I talked the first time, one of the things I found fascinating about you was that you had what you called your 10 principles. These shows kind of try to, they definitely pigeonhole you each individual time because they all have some sort of agenda they're trying to match to get ratings. But how do you feel? I mean, and this is a question that's not just me asking. I see it all the times popping up in the forums that we manage and things that we watch when it comes to, like, doomsday preppers. It's like, how do you allow yourself, if you have a certain set of principles or rules that you live by, how do you allow these other groups to kind of tweak it and maybe make statements that aren't 100% along what you want in order to get on TV? How would you address that?
Well, I actually encourage people that if they're okay with this, if they're comfortable, I encourage them to put their voice out there and to do this. Because look at it this way, and you and I have talked about this, the bad guys are using media. to get their message out. There's got to be a counter message. And even though it's not going to be out there perfect, it's still a start. And, you know, I think the three of us can agree that self-reliance is the ideal lifestyle, as opposed to a socialistic or a communistic or just plain warped, mentality. Self-reliance is a peaceful, empowering, ideal lifestyle for every human being. And if there's going to be enough fluff in there to get someone to go, maybe I'll watch this train wreck, you know? But it helps. I'm okay with it. Obviously, I have my standards. There's some things I would say, there's no way I'm saying that on camera. There's no way I'm doing that. With contracts being drawn up, we're making some tweaking. But I think it's a start. Here's my prediction, if you will. I kind of have some backside information on it, so I know I can say this. You're going to see this become more mainstream. You are going to see it become more normal. And sure, you'll see the freakazoids be highlighted. But I think you'll start seeing this. In fact, I know you'll start seeing this become more mainstream. And we have certain officials in our lives that are trying to paint self-reliance as a bad word, as some kind of a punishment, when in actuality, it's the roots of our nation. So it's a start. That's all it is right now. It's a start, but I think there's going to be a lot more. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I can paraphrase, you know, it's kind of like the old adage, you know, all publicity is good publicity. Good or bad, at least you're getting your voice heard. And I agree with that 100%. You know, and I agree with you. You know, I think one of the reasons why I don't want to, I guess the word commiserate is probably the wrong word, but, you know, kind of understand, you know, where you come from with what some of the stuff you do. You know, I was told when I got into this industry that this was a very forgiving industry. You know, everybody's come from different walks of life and everything else. And what happens is that for every 100 people that are out there that legitimately want to learn, you know, want to hear what you have to say, want to give you a second chance, because if you can change, they can change. There's the handful of idiots out there that have to look at what you've done in the past or some things that might have come up in your personal life and drag it to the forefront, trying to make it seem like that's who you are.
I totally agree with you.
And my whole attitude is if everybody were a complete reflection of who they were when they were in their teens and their 20s and the mistakes that they made, there would be no one that could stand up there and actually teach you anything, because almost everybody's made mistakes.
Absolutely. In fact, there's this new motto that I have, and I've actually been more forgiving of other people's, you know, rut rows. We're all going to make mistakes. Mine just may be more public than yours.
Yeah. Well, and we get it on a fairly continuous basis too. I mean, you know, the people, especially me, you know, but people go and they read things and you know, they populate things, and it's like, look, you know, I'm the first one to admit, and most of my vendors know this because I've been very upfront with things. It's like, look, no one's perfect. You know, everybody makes mistakes and everything else, but we have to use the tools that we have now and the people who we've become to help people from A, not making those mistakes, and B, maybe sparking a light in there and bringing this stuff to the forefront. And I think things like Doomsday Preppers, as goofy as it is, and we're good friends with Alan. He's been on our show twice. He's been to three of our events. He's coming to the next event, and he's the producer for Doomsday Preppers. I like Alan. You know, and
we can't beat up on Alan anyway, though, because he's not responsible for the couple of things that people go, what? Why'd you do that?
Yeah, but they're always going to pick on the people who they can get a hold of.
Yeah, right? That's true.
And that, he explains that when he comes on the show. He's like, look, my job is to make it entertaining as well as try to get the information out there. And I think that that's a good thing. I actually really enjoyed your episode, let me tell you.
Thank you.
I was actually really mad at you, too. I almost called you up the night that it aired, because I finally got my wife convinced that we need to go, you know, we can get a little further away from city and a little more out there rural, so I can play country cowboy a little bit more. And she saw you doing gourmet cooking with survival food, And I'm just like, oh, great. I can see myself having to build a whole new pantry now for, you know, for all this stuff. So it's like, ooh, it doesn't have to be as bad. I'm like, no, honey, it does. It does. Now let's go get our ingredients.
So you got more on your honey-do list. There you go.
My honey-do list increased dramatically.
Baba, that's why we get married, so we can give you guys a honey-do list.
Is that why?
That's why.
I'll remember that.
Somebody to build our
before you too late, because we'll have Jason on here pretty soon. Kelly, can you go through what your 10 principles for everybody? And we'll expound on them hopefully later on another show, but I want to make sure we get them.
Yes, and in the interest of time, too, what I encourage people to do is go to preparednesspro.com, in the search bar, put in quotation marks, 10 principles of preparedness. Basically, what it is it highlights there's 10 aspects to becoming more self-reliant. They are not only 10, but they're in a prioritized order. So they'll start with, the first one is spiritual preparedness. And I'm not talking about somebody's religion or the lack thereof. I'm talking about their beliefs, their value system. Because just like you were saying earlier, Amy, you know, do a gut check. Listen to your instincts. You know, if they tell you to get back into the store and not go out to the car, that's your spiritual preparedness. That's the first thing that anybody's going to be confronted with. Then after that is your mental preparedness, the mental fortitude, your skill set, your knowledge level. After that, then we have the physical preparedness, which is why I'm torturing myself with Krav Maga, because I don't want to be a vulnerability to my husband. And that's where we cover the self-defense as well, the protection. After physical, then our fourth one is medical preparedness. Yay. Again, they're going to run into that before they're going to run into starvation. And then we have clothing and shelter. You know, that's your security of that shelter, as well as the appropriateness of it, the right clothing to wear, et cetera. Like, for example, when I go out, I know I'm going to be out all day. I'm not wearing my heels, not because my feet will be killing, but because I can't defend myself as well in heels as I can some of my other shoes. After your clothing and shelter, pardon me, then you have fuel. And that's any kind of fuel. That's your physical fuel, you know, the energy that you use, as well as anything that you need to stabilize an environment or to give light, et cetera. It's all encompassed under that aspect. After that, then you have water, which is surprising. I mean, everybody says water should be first and foremost. But I think if you go back at any crisis, whether it was a car wreck or whatever, you're going to run in those other aspects before you would water. No one gets in a car wreck and goes, wow, I need my water. after water, then we have food. Now, that's number 8. And yet you hear people most of the time when they talk about preparedness, they talk about food and food storage, which are dirty words in our house. We don't do food storage. We do long-term shelf-stable foods, and that's it. So now we have food, and then after that we have financial preparedness, which usually also surprises people. But I have tried to change this list up and down and back and forth, and it just does not change. And then last but not least certainly is communication preparedness. So those are the 10 principles, and I think if people will look at those as the forest, then they won't feel so overwhelmed as they're trying to get, you know, a year's supply of this or trying to make sure that they know how to defend against this, et cetera. It's much easier to eat that elephant if you understand the 10 principles.
Well, that's really good. I mean, I appreciate that. And I think those are, I think that's almost a whole other episode that we can get you on there, and we can talk about those 10 principles and kind of even have a back and forth with a couple of people to, you know, and see what people think about the order. Because I agree with you. The first thing you read in almost every single book is water. I was, while you were stating it, I actually pulled up like 3 different books. You know, the Bug Out. I got Bug Out. I've got the book by Cody Lundin, and the first thing each one of them covers is water.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that you put it so low on there. So,
right. But you look at Cody. We can look at Cody, and I could go to Cody and say, no, Cody, water's not your first thing. It may be the first thing you teach, but Cody Lundin's a perfect example. He's all about his beliefs first and foremost. He runs around in the bare feet, not just, you know, to prepare for it, but he has his belief system first and foremost that guides him through every other aspect of survival.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think this is why it's such an interesting topic, and we could probably fill an entire 3 hours just going back and forth on that. So, okay.
Can I just say one thing?
No.
Can I just say one thing? You don't let me speak. I'm never doing this again.
I'll play back the first 30 minutes of the show. Go ahead.
The comment that I would like to say is that I appreciate where you have placed the medical preparedness, because I truly agree with your list. Medical has got to be right up there.
Well, please understand, guys, this is not my brilliance. This is me researching various scenarios, whether they be everyday catastrophic or whether they be international catastrophic. And
yep.
It's the scenarios that are unveiling this. I'm just putting, you know, the words to it and the structure. But I didn't create this. It's how nature works. You know, you're going to run into medical issue before you'll run into clothing and shelter.
I agree.
Yep.
All right. Well, we need to go ahead and go to break and get ready for Jason Akers. You know, Kelly,
yeah,
thank
so I
you
get
very,
off to
very
class up in Salt Lake City, and I got to teach. It's probably important for me to be there.
All right, thank you very much for being on. You know something? I'm honored and privileged not only to have you at our event in May, but also to have you on my friends list. You're a wonderful person.
Well, thank you so much, and I do feel the same way, very much so. And Nurse Amy, I will be calling you, my dear, to give you a little interview and have you teach me a few things here.
I would love to speak with you. The problem is we'll never get off the phone. That's the problem. We have so much to talk about, so call me.
All right, let's go over this list. You can check out her blogs and her website at www.preparednesspro.com. If you're interested in reading on all the different things that she has on shooting and different preparedness for women. She also is the author and owner of www.womenofcaliber.com, which we unfortunately didn't get to today. We have her contest that is available until day after tomorrow. We populate that up there, but if you go to her website and click on the link on the left-hand side, you can read all the entries. You can be able to vote on them, but you can also add your own entry. And last but not least, this coming week, we will put up the registration for her rape prevention for couch potatoes. And we've already got $500 of money that we will go ahead and put towards people being able to attend the event that might not be able to attend themselves. So, Kelly Bishop, thank you very much for joining us on our show.
Truly my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
All right. You have a good day. Guys, we're going to take a quick two-minute break, and when we come back, we will be back with Jason Akers, and hopefully the testosterone will build back up. So we'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's enerfood.com, enerfood.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Bubba Da Vinci and Nurse Amy. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, so Amy Alton, who is filling in for our normal host, Colorado Ron. We're honored to have Colorado Ron come in there and smack me around a little bit, since he felt I wasn't getting smacked around enough with just you ladies.
That's right. See, he thought I was being too nice, so I had to poke you a little bit there. But, you know, I love you, Bubba Da Vinci. You know it.
I do. So, next up, we actually have Jason Akers on. Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Jason, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, we appreciate
you coming
Jason.
On. Good
Hi,
morning.
Hi, Amy. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, I appreciate right. having another man on the show, because the last hour and 15 minutes I have been inundated by estrogen and smacked around by women talk. So it's nice to have another man to come here.
Wait, Bubba, not only have you been smacked around, but you're going to be smacked around.
Oh, that's right, because I could volunteer to be the target for a women's, self-defense class.
It's balanced to the force again. So.
So, Jason, you are a writer for Backwoods Home Magazine, and you are also the owner and author of the website The Self-Sufficient Gardener.
Right.
So now, I love your articles that you do on the website. Your Self-Sufficient Gardener. I mentioned to Amy a little bit earlier. I had a bone to pick with you to start off. Started with your articles on there, and was talking to Lisa and everybody at Backwoods Home, and said, "Hey, Jason will come back on, and let's have Jason on the website or on the radio show." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, exciting! This is going to be good." And so I decided I was going to go to your website, since I just started doing some gardening with my wife and got all into the whole chicken episode that you started doing. And I said, "You know something? I am going to make sure I support Jason and click on the subscribe for the your gardening club."
Okay.
And I'll be damned if after I did that, I cannot find how to get into the gardening club. You have your little tutorial that says click on here, and this little thing will come up at the bottom so you can log into the club. 2 days, and we've been going up and down on this thing. And if I thought I felt like an idiot being a prepper, I completely feel like an idiot trying to figure out how to get onto this club after I pay.
I'm sorry about that. At the bottom right-hand column, there's a little login button. If you click login and you put your login information in that I give you, and it may be that I haven't given you your login information yet. I may need to send you an email with that. Sometimes it's not automated as I'd like it. So when you log in there, you get a new tab at the top. It says Garden Club.
Got it. Okay, I see the login. Now I see the login, but see, I haven't gotten my PayPal stuff went through, and I got my PayPal stuff, but I hadn't gotten anything with any login information.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm trying to make it more automated. It's been difficult.
Okay.
I'm not a teacher guy. I'm a gardener.
That's okay. You know something? I feel 100% better because I looked at it, and I'm like, I'm on the about, and I go, okay, I'm following the directions. I see this little link. I click on it, but it's not telling me how to put a name in or how do I get my stuff registered. And I go, okay. So all I was missing was a page. And actually, you know something? It does say here, now that I actually read, that it takes up to 48 hours for you to issue a username or password. So
sometimes you got to remind me.
It's okay. So I guess I have a bone to pick with myself because I'm a typical web user where I read the first line and the last line and want something to work. So okay.
Everybody does that.
All right, so my bone has been picked. So how I find your story fascinating because in 2009 you found yourself basically like a lot of America where you had a job loss, and you basically decided to start documenting all the information that you have in gardening and everything else. And trying to get the information out to everybody.
Right.
Yeah, that seems like a fairly daunting task, when you've lost your job and you're kind of like, okay, well, I'm gonna use this time and just do something like that. I think most people in America, unfortunately, during that time period, just gave up. You know, so many people just didn't do anything, lost their houses and everything else, and didn't even try to find a way to subsidize their income or get their information out there and help others. What made you decide to go ahead and start the site and do this?
Well, I'd already been gardening for a very, very long time. I mean, I've got literally pictures of me in the garden with my dad when I was one, and I'm sitting inside of the garden. He's in there working it. I mean, I've got pictures like that. So, I mean, I've been gardening all my life. And I think I, like most people, had gotten, you know, I was raised in the country, I was raised on a farm, grew up hunting, fishing, gardening, et cetera, and had moved, you know, when we get married, we move away to the city or the suburbs, and we kind of forget all that stuff. And I was in the middle of kind of remembering where I came from, remembering my roots, and part of that was learning that there were so many people out there that had no idea what, you know, there were people talking about it, but there were people that had literally never grown up on a farm, never done this stuff. They were kind of muddling through their first attempts. And I thought, well, I have all this knowledge. You know, we raised rabbits and chickens and cows and pigs and, you know, all that stuff. And people need that information. People wanted that information. So I felt like it was something I had to do. I felt like it was a service to convey that information to people to help them.
And were you married at the time, to Gretchen, and did you already, I don't know how old your son is. So was
my
this
son
was, bolted?
Yeah, my son was literally a little bit over a year and a half when I lost my job. So, I mean, and then she lost her job like the month after that. So it was like, you know, oh, what are we going to do?
Right. And were you, did you already live on your four-acre home farmstead, or is that something that you guys have done since then?
No, the very interesting thing about you know, I was very lucky, and I say, you know, a lot of people wouldn't say this, but I was very lucky to lose my job, because when I lost my job, they gave me I'd been there for almost 5 years at this company, and they gave me a pretty substantial severance bonus. So I was lucky to get kind of laid off at the beginning of this whole, well, not really at the beginning, but kind of in the middle of the whole thing. So they didn't realize how bad the money was going to be. So they gave me a big, you know, a big chunk of money. So with that money, I bought the homestead. So I like to think of it as my homestead was paid for by me getting fired, essentially.
You're probably luckier than most.
I certainly feel like that. Yes.
Right. And you know, how much, Amy, you can jump in here anytime. I think for Amy, I think Amy's trying to hold her tongue and let me get some of these questions out, because she's a gardener too, and she pretty much warned me at the beginning of this, I'm going to take over the show when we get to gardening. So
no, okay, you know what? It's good to get all of this. People need to know who he is and where he started from, and sort of his story before we start getting into, you know, mycorrhizae fungi and his pond and all the other stuff I want to talk about. So, no, it's good, Scott. Go on and on, and then we'll get to little details later.
Yeah.
I'm cool.
Well, and here's the good news is since I have absolutely no skill, and we always joke around on the show that I have a black thumb, and I have absolutely no skill whatsoever, it's nice to have someone on here with Amy that you can talk to on an intelligent level, and I can just I can ask these questions, and then she can jump in and ask the questions. It seems like our show knows what it's talking about, so. The other question I have is, so if you've gone out there, you've now got your place in Kentucky, you got 4 acres, which I'm glad that you're another person. We're finding more and more every week when we do our show that the people who are most prevalent in this marketplace, people who are writing and educating and things like that, aren't owning 100, 200, 300 acres. The standard seems to be between 4 and 20 acres is the typical farmstead / homestead for a lot of these people. So yours is the same way. And is most of that, how close are you to the city? You know, are you out, are you completely out in a rural area when you found your place? Where are you at as far as your setup?
I'm about 10 miles away from a college town. It's actually in the city of Murray in Kentucky. It's in western Kentucky. You may have heard of the Murray State Racers. We were in the NCAA tournament, did pretty well.
I definitely know who they are.
Yeah, so about 10 miles away from there. And the great thing about the city, and we lived here before we moved back away from the suburbs again, the good thing about the city is it takes up a little small spot. It's college town. On the weekends, it empties out. It's kind of a little bit more peaceful. And, it's like everything in Kentucky, and the cities are fairly small and they're fairly compact, and then there's just rural areas all on the outskirts. So I can literally walk down the hill onto Kentucky Lake, which is one of the largest man-made lakes in the East, and go fishing, go hunting, do whatever I want to do. I back right up to TVA land, so it was essentially the perfect spot to buy. I couldn't turn it down.
Well, it does sound perfect. I mean, Those are places that are few and far between that you can actually go and you can back up to timberland that, gives you bigger access to anything and still have – you're still close enough to a college town or a little town that you're not driving 4 hours to go ahead and get supplies that you need.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a realist. I want to be self-sufficient, but I also realize that I'm going to need to go to, Walmart and get, buy a black pepper or something like that. I can't grow that. So, there's certain things you can't grow and certain things plastics are amazing things. So, sometimes you need something that's plastic and you don't have your own oil pump and refinery, so you have to kind of do this stuff. So,
all right. So, I have one more question before we start getting into the gardening and the chicken stuff is Concordia soleus. Why did you put that statement at the end of your introduction, which is actually Latin, for those of you who don't know, which means well-being through harmony? How did you get the motto? I mean, it actually is a motto for a bank. I'm one of those people that likes Latin mottos, like, will it fill Philip Morris cigarettes, vini, vidi, vici, came off Concord. There's always a kid in the
Julius Caesar thing.
Well,
for me, the whole aspect of being self-sufficient and living a self-sufficient life comes down to when you're a gardener, when you're a hunter, when you're a fisher, and it may sound kind of tree huggerish or whatever, but we depend on the land, and we don't. If you forget for any one instance that it's the land and the soil and the trees and the animals and everything that provide you with what you need to survive, then essentially you're not going to survive very long. People back in the Depression were notorious, and they had to do it in order to live to some degree, but were notorious for going out in the woods and slaughtering every animal they saw, and then guess what, next year they had no animals, no deer, no turkeys to hunt. Same way with the garden, we can fertilize it and keep going with chemical fertilizers, and then we may not be guaranteed production next year. So it's harmony with nature. It's learning taking the feedback from nature and learning from that.
Well, very cool. I appreciate anybody that takes the time to put a motto together or uses an old motto like that, because it obviously means they care about what they're doing to come and put some time to make people think. So, but I saw that little tidbit at the bottom. I was like, ooh, I like this guy already. So, all right, go ahead, Amy. You can ask your first question about gardening.
Yeah, but you want to ask him about chickens. It's okay.
No, ahead. I'll embarrass myself at the end.
All right. Well, you know what? I see that you have a pond. Is this a new project? Tell me a little bit about your pond.
Well, with my food forest, I wanted places to store water, and not only places to store water, but places where water would be stored and it would serve another benefit. It would draw in, insects and frogs and snakes and birds and et cetera. And where I originally wanted to garden was at the bottom of this little hill out of my food forest to kind of collect the runoff and everything. But I had the electric company, when they came out to set my poles for my temporary electric, they backed a big truck up next to one of my drainage ditches, one of my swales, and it caused this huge depression, and it kept filling up with water. And I thought, rather than fight it, let's just dig it out a little bit and make it into a pond. It's now a pond. It's about 10 by 15 feet, and it's been a cool project because I can do so much with it. I've planted clover and things on the whole berm that holds it in. I've put a water lily in there to help provide habitat. I've got frogs already, tadpoles, which are of course baby frogs. I've got dragonflies. It's between my beehive and the garden, so the bees have a nice place to stop off for water. It just provides so many benefits. It was a no-brainer.
Absolutely. Now, are there any fish for your area that might be able to survive in this pond? I mean, is this something you've considered stocking up with a few edible fish?
It's something I've considered, and I think eventually probably we will do something with tilapia, but not necessarily in the pond. What will probably grow in the pond, it's kind of a shallow draft of the pond. I wanted to dig it deeper, but it stays about a foot and a half deep. So probably not very good habitat for tilapia or bass or probably even catfish, really. But, you know, they could survive in there. Probably more likely what will grow in there is, you know, crayfish or something like that, or even goldfish. To keep goldfish in there, keep the mosquito larvae down, but they also make great catfish bait. So and go to the lake and fish for catfish. So it's kind of like what do I do? You know, I can put fish in there, but I've got this great lake, you know, which is just, you know, right down the hill that, you know, has all kinds of awesome fishing in it. So I thought about it. It's just kind of like one of those things where if I could dig it, you know, maybe a foot deeper, it would be good, but.
Yeah, I know. The problem with a pond stocked with fish is if you don't give them a deep enough area, they have a hard time staying away from predators. And then when it gets cold in the winter, they need to go deeper for their warmth. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think it's really cool that you're sticking with that whole issue of living with nature. And you sort of said, you know what, this is a great area. This is collecting water naturally, and I'm just going to go with it. I love that whole idea of harmony with nature for gardening. How do you use that principle in your garden? What do you do, let's say, for pest and disease control? What are you doing?
Well, obviously, I like, you know, the companion planting and drawing in beneficials is a huge thing. And I think, you know, there's always a certain level that you can always add with, you know, planting flowers and things like that. I think you and I have talked in the past about marigolds and you know, all kinds of flowers that either repel pests or they bring in beneficials. But there's also, to a degree, leaving the spots in the garden that are wild, you know, letting the weeds grow up a little bit, not freaking out so much that, you know, there's, you know, a few, you know, sprigs of chickweed or purslane in the garden. You know, that stuff's edible, first of all. And second of all, you got to have some place for the good insects to hide if they're hunting the bad insects. You know, we don't go out into a field with a rifle and just stand up in the field, and, you know, nothing would even come close enough to get shot. You know, we have to have somewhere where we can stalk it. And I believe in leaving, you know, non-interventionist whenever possible. You know, we monkey with the garden too much, and sometimes it's just best to let it kind of do what it's going to do.
I think that is a wonderful idea, and I think too many people spend time weeding their garden. In fact, my husband, Dr. Bones, went out, and I have some strawberries growing, and there were some wild dandelions who had just decided to take up residence within my strawberries. And before I could open my mouth, he reached over and grabbed that dandelion and ripped it out. I was like, no. I said, that is great. Please leave the dandelions. They're flowers. It'll attract, like you said, the good pests, and keep that harmony with nature. And I absolutely love that saying, and it may come out of my mouth in the future on our shows, because it's perfect. I love it. But, yes, giving those pests a place to stay so they can come kill those bad bugs is awesome. Now, what do you do if you do see a disease? Let's say something gets powdery mildew. What are some of your favorite ways to treat some of these ill-gotten diseases that attack our baby plants?
Well, a lot of it for me is prevention. And believe it or not, I don't have too many trouble. You know, I have trouble with pests. I freely admit, you know, that sometimes I have trouble with pests. I just don't get a crop, and I just go on. You know, there's sometimes
yeah.
You can't control what happens. But with the diseases, I don't really have to battle too many. Mulch is one of the biggest preventative things for disease. The problem is that the moisture stays on the plants too long, and the moisture sits in the ground, and the moisture has, you know, the disease breeds with the moisture, and the disease breeds with you know, the lack of airflow, and
mm-hmm.
the mulch actually keeps the, you know, keeps the moisture down in the soil away from the plant. It gets even moisture. It's not you know, wet and dry, wet and dry, wet and dry. It stays evenly. It lets the plant grow strong. You know, good soil obviously helps with that. You know, you want a balance of good microbes down in your soil that are going to you know, balance out the whole equation, make your plant grow better. I just did a pest show again. It seems like it's one of the shows I do the most, but really for pests or disease, you know, good strong plants should be able to resist quite a bit of that.
You're right. Now, what's your favorite mulch? What do you like to use?
I like straw personally. There's a lot of people out there that like wood chips, and I don't really. I did a show also called "There's No Such Thing as a Bad Mulch," and I should qualify that. There's such thing as a bad mulch. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't want to use treated lumber chipped up. You wouldn't want to use something like you know, rubber tires that have been chipped up. They do that a lot. But as far as the organic stuff goes, you can't really go wrong. Grass clippings, you know, a lot of people have trouble with grass clippings because they say, well, grass clippings have weed seeds. And I say, again, who cares about weeds? You know, let a few weeds grow. Who cares? But really, straw is my favorite mulch. Straw is probably number one. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jason. I'll interrupt in a second. Go ahead.
No. So straw is probably my favorite. But then again, if I've got I talked about the electric company came in and set poles on my property. They had to clear some trees and they chipped them up, you know, up into the forest. I just took a garden wagon up there and loaded up all the chips. So I've got straw, I've got wood chips, I've got compost, I've got, you know, leaf litter, anything I can use, I use. I'm not really discriminating too much.
So on that subject, here's where I get to be Bubba, which is, because I know absolutely nothing. So to both of you, what is the definition of, you know, I'm just trying to get into composting. I mean, you're talking about an ex-Texan suburbanite who just 8 months ago, I didn't even go outside. You hired a gardener to go and clip everything up, and they hauled it away on the back of their little trailer. So now I'm living out here in rural Iowa. You know, I'm mowing the lawn, I'm mowing the field, I'm collecting all the stuff, and I start making a big pile on it, and I'm turning it, not knowing what the hell I'm doing, and saying, okay, eventually it'll look like something I'm supposed to spread on my plants. And now you guys are talking about mulch, and I'm like, ooh, I've got grass, I've got tons of straw, I've got bales of straw everywhere that I was going to cut up and burn. So what are you supposed to, I mean, mulch, what is the purpose of mulch? I mean, when do you use it? How do you... My job on this show is to ask all the questions. All the other newbies are going, yeah, what is – I'm like him. What is it? What the hell are you talking about? So what is
all right, Jason, you get to answer this.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well, so mulch for me, you know, a lot of people with mulch, they say, well, mulch has its purpose. Its purpose is to keep the moisture in the soil. So, for instance, you know, the plant always gets consistent moisture. So if it rains – and then the sun comes out, the sun doesn't hit the ground, dry the water away, and your plant has no more moisture. It keeps the soil cool or warm, depending on what season it is. It keeps the soil even temperature, keeps the soil even moisture. But above that, the mulch breaks down and becomes compost. You talked about, you know, your compost pile and turning it and wondering if you're doing it right. When I was at the Mother Earth News Fair, I got huge laughter about this one statement. Anything that's organic eventually becomes compost, and that if I were to lay down on the ground and just not, you know, no one were to feed me or water me for a while, I would turn into compost. So it's really hard to screw up when you're mulching and when you're composting. It eventually will turn back into soil.
Okay, so here's an interesting question. I accidentally, as Amy knows, I was a fool and planted early last year when I didn't know I was not supposed to plant. And I ended up just covering everything with straw so the ground was fine. And then when I pulled off the straw about a month ago, boop, I have things growing and already growing up and everything else. And everybody was like, ooh, I basically just planted early. I had carrots, I had rhubarb, you know, things that just were sprouting. Now, so my wife, you know, and was saying, hey, we need to get all this straw off these plants before they mildew and everything else goes. So I pulled all the straw off of everything and then hooked up, turned it out, and threw it into my compost pile. Could I have left that on there? Is that, I mean,
yeah.
If I had just left it on there, the things would have grown up and it would have been fine?
Absolutely. I mean, go ahead, Jason. I know you're about to say the same thing, but I would not have moved it.
Yeah, no, Amy's exactly right. And you know, a lot of people will look at that, and like your wife did. And, you know, it's not wrong. It's just the fact that we've been conditioned over time to think of that stuff as harmful. You know, you see mildew, you see mold, and you know these funguses and things like that, and you think, God, I mean, you know, we hear about mold in our houses, and that's a totally different type of mold, and we think, you know, that can kill us. You know, so we got to get this stuff out of our garden. We don't want it next to our plants. But in nature, with the, you know, with straw on the savannas, on the plains, on the grassland, and with, you know, leaves in the forest, there's certain things that break them down, fungus, molds, etc., that they're there to eat that stuff and turn it back into soil. So your straw was just in the process of composting. You didn't really do anything wrong. You just took it off of where it could have composted directly and would have broken it. I get mushrooms and stuff in the garden. People write me all the time. I've got, you know, this weird mushroom, and I know it's not edible, but I want it out of my garden. Well, you know, who cares? It's just making more mushrooms to help break down your mulch. It's going to turn into soil quicker.
You guys are now my new best friends. I am becoming a master prepper by accident, and I'm loving this because I'm out here in a rural area where all these guys have been farming for 20 generations or God knows what it is. And so every time I do something as a city boy and they look at me, they go, yeah, he's just from the city. And every week I come up and I find out I wasn't doing it wrong. And I get to go back and say, ha, ha, ha.
So ha, ha, ha.
There you go. I'm feeling pretty good again, going back out there and telling my well, my straw was right. Putting my
there
straw
down. And next time, just leave that straw where it is over the season. It'll break down, and it'll just add some wonderful nutrients to your garden. You had done it right, buddy.
There you go.
Yep, so add more straw on top. Just keep replenishing.
Let me jump from vegetables and our gardening for a second to another thing. So I want to make sure we get a little bit of everything. You know, it's interesting. In the next month's issue, which is what I was looking at or reading earlier, you do you write your article on frog gigging. And
yes.
I'm very interested, and I will probably have you back on. Hopefully you'll want to come back on after talking to some people like us. But, you know, I'll have you back on after the magazine is out, which should be coming out shortly. And, you know, frog gigging was very common in certain parts of Texas and Louisiana and things like that. And, you know, it's part of life. You mentioned that up here in the Midwest, or you mentioned in California, things like that. People look at you cross-eyed like you've got to be nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it fairly common in Kentucky, or is it just something that you've kind of fallen back into? And B, you know, how often do you do it, and how common is it, I would guess?
It's fairly common in Kentucky. I mean, it's not, you know, obviously you wouldn't go into the suburbs and talk to people about frog gigging. I don't think I ever walked into a suburban garage and saw, you know, a frog gig sitting there, well, with the exception of my suburban garage. I had my frog gig still there. But it's, when I was growing up, and I guess, you know, I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, there were, you know, if you had a friend, you could say, hey, you want to go frog gigging? And then they wouldn't say, what's the heck's frog gigging? You know, they would say, sure, you know. It was at least if you didn't do it, you knew what it was, and you kind of had a general idea how to do it. So for me, I don't get to go as much as I like. The lake where I live, it's not great for frog gigging because it's so huge. You know, I'm sure there's areas where you can definitely gig frogs. It's just hard to find those spots. The best frog gigging I ever did was just in little farm ponds, which, you know, you'd have the cow run off and stuff. It'd be really lush ponds, and there'd just be frogs all over them. But you can really easily over gig a pond quickly and totally kill your population. So it's been a couple years at least since I've been frog gigging, but, you know, the memories are still there. I still know how to do it. I go out back tomorrow and do it. It's just finding the right spot. That's the trouble.
Right.
I have a small little comment, and let me just preface this by saying that I did live in Georgia on 4 acres for many, many years growing up, but I have no idea what the heck frog gigging is. I had to just...
Really?
I'm serious. I have no idea.
Well, and it's kind of funny. When I was growing up, I'm kind of like Jason. When I was growing up, you could walk into a Walgreens or, you know, some of these little stores like Woolworths, and go into the sporting sections, and they would sell frog gigs. And now I would guess that I would say something to most people, and they wouldn't have a clue what I was talking about.
Okay, can we just have a little definition of what the heck this thing is?
All right, so frogging is essentially you're taking a spear onto a pond and onto a lake, onto a body of water, and a light. Shine the light down the bank, and when you shine the light down the bank, the frog's little eyes light up like little flashlights. Yep, so you zone in on one, and you sneak up on him, and you put the gig into him. The gig's just like a little, it looks like a little trident, a little three-pointed spear. You just kind of stab him and put him in the bag and go on.
And you're doing this because you're going to eat them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, frog legs for everyone.
Oh, frog legs are great. They're great eating, for sure.
I don't think most people realize just how much meat in general is on a frog, just outside the legs. But
well, when we see frogs, we see like little tree frogs and things like that around our property. But I mean, no, I've gigged bullfrogs that probably weigh 2 pounds, you know, or more.
Whoa!
You know, big frogs. So.
Wow.
Well, see, Amy, you've learned something different. I would probably guarantee you probably have quite a few meals around your property, and although I think it would be funny to see Amy in hit boots going around the ponds in her suburbanite area with a frog gig.
Wait. I have to tell you guys something. That we have, they're bufu frogs, those poisonous ones that came over from Australia. They thought it would be really great in Florida to bring these frogs over to, I don't know, they were going to eat something. Who knows what they're trying to think. But they are crazy, and they kill animals. So if your dog bites it, that's what killed one of my dogs. Was biting the head of this thing, and it has a poison that comes out of it, and they're huge. But I don't gig, I golf. And I take my golf clubs, and I go around at night, and I putt-putt with the frogs.
Oh, man.
But there's no purpose to eating them. They're horrible. They kill everything. They're just, they're like the pythons out in our Everglades. They're just,
you know what you should do with them?
What?
You should catch a few and do like the natives did, rub some of the poison on an arrowhead and go out deer hunting with them.
There you go. There you
That's
go.
That's totally illegal, I think, probably, but
this
anyway.
This is really an invasive species, and I don't think I can eat them. And there's no other frogs because they're killing everything else. It's terrible.
All right. Well, before we go on with the topic, this is a public service announcement for the people who support PETA organization.
Okay.
We do not
they're
endorse.
Horrible.
We do not endorse Amy's putting of frogs for non consumable purposes.
All right, I deny it. I deny it. I was just making up the whole thing.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, so now we can get on with the show. It's one thing to go out there and make statements about eating animals and things like that because we're doing it for self-reliance reasons. Another thing for using our 9-iron on them to get out of our yard.
You're just opening up the habitat. That's all it is.
That's right. Okay, so good segue back to Katie. Go ahead and ask a vegetable question so I can figure out where to go.
Okay. Well, you know, Jason, I just wanted to tell you the reason that I have these problems with diseases because I live in South Florida and our humidity. And you were talking about that, you know, the high humidity and too much moisture is bad for diseases. And, you know, pretty much the leaves are always wet and the soil is always soaked. And I have to do raised beds and container gardening. Do you have any advice for people like me who do live in these more humid environments for trying to keep down the moisture in the ground as far as with raised beds? Is there any way to increase drainage is what I'm saying?
I'm trying to think of something that might help you. I mean, the probably the biggest thing, and you probably already know this, for like most people that grow in more humid climates, is you have to keep the spacing better between your plants. Like, you know, we're instance here in Kentucky, I might give a tomato plant 3 feet between two tomato plants. You're going to have to give them like four and let the wind and the air work in there and the sun.
Okay.
Obviously, we talked about mulch, but if you are trying to keep the soil, trying to keep it a little bit less damp, probably the mulch you want to use would be something that would be darker. You know, for instance, you might not really want to use straw too much in your mulch. You might want to use something that's darker, like dark wood chips or something like that, where the heat can kind of work on the moisture a little bit and evaporate it. But then again, you get back into the whole thing where if you heat it up too much, because you're in a hot climate too. So it's a delicate balance, but definitely the plant spacing would be the first thing.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Before we jump into any more topics,
we have to go to a break. It's the top of the hour. And when we come back, we'll jump into chickens with you, Jason, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, sounds good. I have lots of chicken questions.
All right, so we'll be back in 3 minutes, guys, after this break.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
Well, I hope not. Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci. I'm here with Amy Alton, Nurse Amy. And our special guest for the second half of the show is Jason Akers of the SelfSufficientGardener.com. Thank you for coming back with us, Jason.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
So, we went over frog gigging, which I wanted to kind of get out there because you have, like I said, you have the article getting out there, and I'm kind of surprised that there is not so many people that actually know about it. That's why I said I want to have you back on. I'd have you back on anyway, just because your two topics are so fascinating. But I think that we're going to get a slew of questions, like Amy, who people are preppers that are going frog gigging. What is that? I mean, even our producer was kind of like frog gigging. You know, I think it's fantastic that people have forgotten about something like that, and that you guys are going to be exploring it in the magazine.
I make it sound so romantic too in the magazine, standing in mud up to your waist.
So, are you doing a personal experience sort of thing, or just is it a how-to?
It's how to, but also I've been told by my editors at Backwoods Home, who are great, by the way, but my editors in other places that I'm too conversational when I talk. But the magazine seems like that because I can talk about, you know, I can open up the intro with this is, you know, me doing it, and this is how, you know, you can do it. You know, so it helps to have some experiential stuff in there as well.
Okay, I'm going to stop real quick. Apparently, Colorado Ron has nothing to do during his anniversary trip and instead wants to call in again and have the question for you. So, Colorado Ron, are you there? Ron? Okay, let's see if he pops. Steve, if he comes back in, go ahead and bring him in on the conversation when he pops on, okay?
His wife hung up the phone.
Yeah, she probably did. Here's this guy that's taking a romantic trip with his wife. He goes, we're leaving on Thursday. We're going to do a whole weekend trip. And he's already – this is his second time calling in on the show. So either – you know, he better be – it must have been a really nice trip if she's letting him call in. Okay. So, anyway, you know, I listened to your episode 169, Chicken Myths and Misconceptions, and I find it interesting because I fell right into this. We decided that we were going to move here. We moved up to Iowa, and we decided that we were going to do chickens as part of this whole thing. And I built, if you get a chance to check on my Facebook, Jason, I have this monster of a chicken coop. I mean, it could have been a playhouse for my kids if I didn't have chickens, because it's, you know, 4x4s and 3/4-inch plywood. You know, it's 2-story. I mean, it's got vinyl floors inside, so I thought it would be easier to clean up the poop. I mean, it's massive. And I have three chickens. And I fell into this whole thing. I started reading, you know, everybody's got a book out, and they say, you know, make something that's sturdy because you have to be worried about the weather. Well, I overdid that. And, you know, you want to keep them. I want minor combination of free range / not free range. And what I mean by that is we're not feeding them supplemental food. But what I've had to do is I kind of fence them into a, I think it's 30x30 area. So that way, you know, we have way too many feral cats and raccoons and mink and fox and everything else in the area that just will, you know, get out there and get them. And since I don't get to keep an eye on them, I figured I'd fence it and make it more difficult. but, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, things like you said, like chickens are vegetarians. I totally went through this and bought this, you know, and I was like, but they eat bugs, but those aren't really meat. But, you know, these guys, I had a can of tuna out that I was going to feed something else, and these chickens were all into the tuna. And then my wife's like, it's okay, it's good for their protein. Yeah, how many people do you find as they go and they do these things? And I thought it was a great podcast, by the way. Buy into the wives' tales. I mean, like, chickens are vegetarians, and you have to keep, you know, if you feed them the eggshells, which are good protein, they'll cannibalize their own eggs and things like that. I mean, are there a lot of people like me that completely buy into these things?
Believe it or not, it's you know, I talk to the quote unquote, as you said, newbies who are doing this for the first time and who don't have any experience. But believe it or not, the people that have the experience, like, you know, my grandma would tell me the same thing, is that, you know, if you feed a chicken, you know, the eggshell is going to cannibalize its eggs. It's these things have been passed down forever. The internet allows people that are newbies to repeat them, you know. So if I say, you know, I'm starting up, you know, my chicken coop, and I just now done this, and you know, my grandma says that, you know, chickens will cannibalize their eggs, except they don't really say grandma, they just say chickens will cannibalize their eggs, and they've repeated this fact, and it goes on and on and on. And most, like, you know, this old cliche that every myth has a base in reality is really the truth, and I hate to even repeat it, but it is. And it's that, you know, I tried to talk about it on that show why, you know, people think that, and why that becomes, you know, common knowledge, although it's not true. And it's, you know, it's because of, you know, bad practices, or people messed up, or because, you know, something happens and it changes things, and it's not the normal order, but people take it as the normal order, and they're always, you know, too cautious, I guess you'd say. So yeah, it's repeated, but it's not just repeated by people who are new at this. It's repeated by virtually everyone. And like I said, there's some truth to it, which is why it gets repeated and why it actually sounds correct, you know. So
there's a couple things that, you know, I think you might be able to help me out. So hopefully you can, that you might have experience on. So I started with three hens, and, you know, so my daughters and I could get adjusted to having chickens. You know, I bought older hens that someone had that were already producing, and figured that, you know, that way we could kind of get a cycle going and we could see what was going to happen. And I admitted two shows ago that the first mistake that I made was I didn't realize that you had to home your chickens. And and so we had a hell of a time getting them in the first night because they didn't know that this new house was their home. Now,
right.
Now we've established that base, and they go inside there, but we're getting ready to introduce, we got some chicks for Easter, and we're going to an auction next week, and we're getting some new chickens. And my question is, long story, is what is the possibility, or how do I go about getting these new chickens to home when I'm letting the other ones out? Well, is it kind of like a dog? If you put one dog in the yard, an older dog, and then the puppy gets up there, the puppy starts following the process? Or am I going to have to try to do, am I introducing these chickens and going to have to try to do almost two different groups?
They will develop what's, you know, quote unquote called a pecking order. So, you know, they will eventually, it kind of depends on how it happens. If you introduce a really strong rooster in, and all you've got in there, you know, is three kind of docile hens right now, the rooster will tell them what to do. You know, they will follow him around and that they'll do whatever he does. So if your rooster's new and you let him loose and he runs away, he's going to take, you know, might take them with him. It's really hard to say exactly what will happen because, you know, chickens all have, you know, people don't, this was another misconception, is chickens all have their own unique little personalities, and you may have one of the same breed that's, you know, mean and cranky, and one that's, you know, totally, you know, docile like a pet. So it really depends on kind of the arrangement. It would be difficult to say, but what you might do, and I looked at your coop, by the way, it's massive. So you might want to, like, divide it off and leave them into, like, a section for just a couple of days or onto, like, a separate cage, and then, you know, kind of release them in there slowly. And especially if you're going to release smaller chickens in with the larger chickens, you'll have to be really careful because sometimes, like I said, they will develop a pecking order, and that means somebody's going to get pecked.
Okay. Yeah, as part of that, I mean, is there like a right time to introduce like the chicks? I mean, you know, even the ones that we're probably going to buy in auction are probably going to be already 6 to 8 months old, so they're fairly larger.
Good.
You know, it's
good.
And I think they'll probably sustain a little bit better with the bigger chickens. I'm just hoping that they'll follow them up into the roost and inside the hen house and go inside there. But I'm really concerned about these baby chicks. It's like, it seems like if you introduce them at the wrong time, you can definitely have a problem.
Yeah, it's really difficult to say. There's no good right time, except I wouldn't introduce them during feeding time, you know, specifically during that time. I'd make sure everybody's good and fed and then let the chicks in. There's always some risk with, you know, smaller chickens and putting them in larger chickens. I had a guy who wrote me and asked me a question. He said, my rooster is pecking my hens to death. It's just ripping out all their feathers. And I started digging in deeper and digging in deeper. Well, you know, is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Turns out he had a full-size rooster and bantam hens, and the rooster was breeding with the bantam hens, and it was just, I mean, you can imagine what would happen. You know, you have a chicken that's half the size and a chicken that's twice the size, and when they're kind of trying to do the deed, and somebody's not going to be happy with that arrangement. So it's really difficult to say with larger and smaller chickens when and how to introduce them. It's just, you probably, when you do it, you want to watch them for at least an hour or so and make sure nothing's going to happen. I mean, once that goes through, you know, they're not going to start pecking them after you leave. They'll either peck them when they're there or they won't peck them when you're there. So.
Right. So I got two more questions, and then I'll let Amy jump in because I know Amy's not a chicken person yet, which is how much space? You know, if you're free ranging the chickens, and obviously the optimal thing would be just to let them go and then they'll come back and at night and everything else. But I live at the edge of town, and so I don't want to have them getting too far because there's still cars driving down the road and things like that, and these people aren't going to stop. So I've got to fence them into some form.
Yeah, you know, right.
How long do you leave them in an area before you should move them? I mean, if I've got, you know, let's say, you know, like I said, it's probably 10 to 15 yards by 10 to 15 yards, which is plenty of space. They could go and run there for a while. Yeah, how do you know when it's time to move them to a new area?
If you're free ranging,
right?
Yeah, I do a chicken tractor. Also, I've got to have a chicken coop, and eventually I'll probably doing all three eventually. I've got 27 chickens right now in various stages of growth. So they'll get released into their various areas, you know, as they go. But for free ranging, you really don't. I mean, if you confine them with like a net or a fence, electro net or something like that, they'll kind of you pretty much. Depend if you, as long as you don't crowd them, as long as they have, you know, 10 square feet or so per bird, you'll never run out of grass and stuff for them to kind of dig around in. If you're trying to confine them to something smaller, you'll see the grass kind of start to not really die, but it's kind of looking kind of crappy. You'll want to move them. I mean, that's kind of how I judge it. When I pull my chicken tractor over an area, I'm kind of looking for them to degrassify the area. I'm kind of looking for them to totally, you know, barren, you know, put it in the wasteland and fertilize it, and then I'll let that area become garden, you know, the next year or 6 months later. So it really depends on, you know, the size of the birds, like I said, the foliage you have there. So what I would do if I were you is just put them in one spot and kind of, you know, observe it, maybe go out after a week or so and look and say, well, I need to move them. I mean, that's, you know, the farmers have, you know, they'll give you these things on the internet, like for cows rotational grazing. They'll say, you can do it this time and then this time and this time. But there's the people that actually do it will tell you that they have to actually read what's going on with the land to know when to actually do it. You know, may have to run, you know, 3 days, you may have to run 10 days. You don't really know in certain instances until you see what's happening.
Okay, that makes sense. And then you kind of jumped on the next topic, which is fertilizer. You know, I hear that the droppings from the birds make excellent fertilizer. And, you heard that I'm playing at doing compost right now. I read someplace that you don't really want to use the bird droppings and you kind of talk about having the chickens in your garden. Someone said that what you don't want to do is have the chickens in your chicken tractor in your garden, because the droppings have salmonella in it and it could get into your plants, and that you have to put it into a compost pile for, like, you know, a certain period of time before it even gets near a plant. I mean, is that a myth or is that accurate?
In some ways, it's kind of a myth. You know, it goes back to, you know, chickens raised in cages, and they're kind of, they don't really have access to things that they can eat they can't self-medicate. They can't go and find a plant that actually, you know, kills the bacteria or helps balance their digestive system. So they crap out this toxic goo, which has salmonella or E. coli or whatever in it, in the farm, in the cage farm settings, you know, not, in mine in your backyard. In your backyard, what they're talking about with the chicken droppings is they say they're too quote unquote hot, and what they mean by that is there's too much nitrogen in them, and the nitrogen, yes, if you took, you know, solid chicken poop and you had, like, you know, a pound of chicken poop and you put it next to a plant, you'd kill it. It'd be dead within like 2 days. It would just get over nitrified and kill off. But with putting the chicken tractor in the garden, you're not really, if you're moving it in a consistent manner and you're moving it before everything gets, you know, totally died out, and, you know, you don't leave the chickens there for a week, you know, you leave them there for 2 or 3 days, it's not really going to hurt too much. But obviously you're not going to put them where your plants are anyway. You don't want them eating your plants. So that's why it's best when you do a chicken tractor, do it in fallow ground and run your chicken tractor over that and then move it. And then, you know, a month, 2 months later, you go ahead and put it down, you know, put plants down where you had the chickens. The hot manure is kind of a myth, and it's kind of not. There's people that freak out about using the hot manure, but if you use it, yes, straight, just a pile of chicken poop, it's going to burn your plants. The reason why is that chickens, they excrete out of one place, but when they excrete solid and liquid waste at the same time, just like all birds. You know, you see that, you know, you get bird droppings in your car and it just kind of splatters. That's solid and liquid in the same dose, essentially. The liquid part is urea. And the solid part is more carbon and still a little bit of nitrogen and potassium, phosphorus, things like that. So when the chickens poop, you want to separate the urea away from the other good stuff you want to use, which is, you know, the cooler stuff. The urea is what's hot. It's ammonia, essentially. So if you have them do their business into wood chips or straw or something that's absorbent, it will soak up that urea and start to decompose immediately. Now, you take that mixture and you put it down in your garden, and your garden slow releases that stuff instead of giving it a huge hot dose of nitrogen all at once. So in this way, you can actually apply chicken manure directly. I do it all the time. I apply it directly to the garden, but I make sure there's something in there that soaked up all of the liquid stuff that I don't want burning my plants. Does that make sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense. And actually, that actually helps me out a lot, because when we're putting the bedding down and everything else, there's been a lot of debate on if we can take the bedding and, you know, use that on the garden directly, because it's not as, well, we figured it wasn't as bad as the droppings directly. So what
right,
you're saying
right.
is that's probably the bedding is probably worse because it has absorbed all that stuff than actually using the solid wood.
No, the bedding's better because it's taking up all that stuff, so it's slow releasing it. You're getting more of a decomposition than you are just straight dose of nitrogen onto your plant. So when you put that down, you're not putting the straight liquid into the ground. You're actually composting while it works. So you're not all of that urea and all that nitrogen is not available directly to the plant. It gets slow released. That's the problem with chemical fertilizers, is there's no slow release to it. You dump them on the soil and everything either leaches away or goes directly in. You put too much, you can burn your plants. You put too little, it all washes away and you don't get any effect. So what you're doing with this essentially is just tying up some of the nitrogen and putting it into the carbon source. You've got too much nitrogen and not enough carbon. You put some carbon there with it, you'll balance out the equation. So it's always good when you do this. Because I don't know what you're feeding your birds. I don't know what kind of birds yours are. What climate influences have. So it's best when you do this to take a little bit of the bedding, put it around the plant, and see what happens. I mean, I got through this completely by experimentation. Everybody told me chicken manure is too hot. You'll never be able to use it on your garden. And I said, well, what will happen if I look at the science? What will happen if I do this? And I did it, put around some plants, and they popped up and they grew like crazy. And I said, well, I'm gonna do this more. Do it more, and it everything worked out fine. So it's a little bit of experimentation, obviously.
I'm the king of experimentation, obviously. I'm fuddling my way through it, and it's been working out for me, so I am definitely going to try that. So,
you learn more stuff by muddling through sometimes than you do by reading the book learning. So
I agree, and I was the exact opposite, which is when I got into this and we started this show, I've got two bookshelves full of the books, and I thought that I could get through being, trying to get this lifestyle out of a book, and I'm finding that that's just not the case.
All right, I have a question. I would like to know if you have, Bones and I would like to move to a small little farm area, but let's say we only have an acre, and I want to plant a garden, but I also want to have chickens. Do you let your chickens free range over the garden where you just planted your seed, or are they going to go ahead and eat your seeds before they germinate?
They'll eat your seeds before they germinate. Yeah, chickens are great at scratching, and the good thing about that is if you put them on a garden before you plant your seeds, and even just for a day or two and let them kind of scratch around, they'll dig around in the soil and they'll pull out, grubs, larvae from, Japanese beetles or bean beetles or any kind of insect or beetle that has to go through a larval stage that happens in the ground, where they lay the eggs in the ground, the eggs hatch, it becomes a little grub or a little worm, and then eventually when the temperature becomes right, comes to the surface and starts eating your plants. Well, you let the chickens go in there before you plant, and they dig up all this stuff and they eat it. Then you plant, you got a little dose of nitrogen, you've got, your bugs are all gone, you plant, everything comes up, and it should theoretically work just fine.
Okay, now the question is, how do I keep these chickens out of the garden? They jump up. I know some people who own chickens, and those things will fly up on the top of their chicken coop, and sit up there. How do you keep them out of the garden?
When you free range them, unless you're going to fence it off, you really can't. And I dealt with this a long time ago when I free range chickens a little bit. And they would, when they eat something like a tomato or the two tomatoes or three tomatoes, you're like, well, whatever, I lost a tomato, but at least I fed my chickens. But when they stick a beak into a watermelon and it starts to rot, it's kind of really annoying. So, that was kind of one of the things I talked about in the episode, was a lot of people had this, romantic vision of their chickens are just wandering through their garden and picking out the pests and leaving all the tomatoes alone. But they will peck a tomato and they will peck, a cucumber or a watermelon or what have you. So you have to kind of balance it. Do you plant enough where they can kind of browse a little bit and have at your garden? Because, that's cool, too, for some people. or do you have to fence them out of that? And it's kind of whatever you want to do. You know, some people choose to keep them in a coop or a tractor, and a tractor you get both benefits. You get to keep them in the garden kind of close, and you get to, you know, kind of have them free range a little bit. So it's kind of a trade-off either way you go.
Jeff, or Jason, excuse me. We have about 7 minutes left, and we always like to give our guests an opportunity to kind of talk about some of the things they're doing. Since, you know, you've got your garden club membership that you're doing, and you write actually not just what we have this article coming out in Backwoods Home, but you also write for other magazines as well and things like that. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing and about your garden club?
Okay. Well, I've got articles coming out, obviously, in Backwoods Home magazine. I've got they've got such a backlog of my articles, I think they're going to have to do an entire episode devoted to me at some point. I'm just joking, by the way, on that. But, you know, Backwoods Home has a lot of my articles, things like trapping, hunting, fishing, things like that. You know, they love those type of articles, so I can sell those to Backwoods Home very easily. And they, you know, there's a need for them in that magazine. They want to teach people about that type of stuff. So a lot of those types of articles are coming out in Backwoods Home coming up. I also write for Back Home magazine, not to be confused with Backwoods Home. It's kind of a one of the magazines that spun off of Mother Earth News. I've got articles that will be coming out in Self-Reliance Illustrated. In fact, their current issue has two of my articles in it, about foraging and about gardening. I've actually got two books coming out probably this year. I say probably this year because they're in the editing process. One is a collaboration with a whole bunch of other people who, you'll find this interesting, identify themselves as preppers. So that entire book collection will be coming out later this year. And then I've also got another book that I'm doing independently that will be coming out this year. This is all through a prepper publisher. It's a publishing company called Prepper Press. If you haven't checked them out, they've got a great website. And they've already got a pretty established bookshelf also with some authors that are getting pretty well known. Then there's a garden club membership. Obviously, I sell that for $4 per month. It's a subscription basis. I offer discounts to various vendors, survival gear bags. If you're looking for a bug out bag, they've got some great stuff. I've also got a sponsor who sells mycorrhizal and soil bacteria package you can put on your garden. I've got the guy that makes the Soil Cube tool, Clayton Jacobs at soilcube.com. They've all offered discounts that will essentially pay for the membership within the first month. And then all of my articles that have been published, when Backwoods Home publishes an article, they release the rights back to me. And when they do that, I'm able to let my garden club members have that article. They're able to read that. So it's a pretty good package, I think. I try to make it as discounted as possible. So it's $4 per month, and it helps support the show. And there's a podcast roughly every 2 days during the week, and try to get the information out there to everyone.
Well, wonderful. Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to do more. Actually, we know the guys at Self-Reliance Illustrated. We work with Dave Canterbury and the guys that come to our show. And we've had the magazine and everything on our show. We've been talking to them several times. That's the Pathfinder School, and that does that with that group. So they were at our last show. And we'd love to. Hey, if you ever want to get a little more audience out there, we'd love to have you rebroadcast on our radio station. I love your stuff. And,
great, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's very well done, and your information is very good. So, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing your article in next month's magazine.
Great. Awesome. Me too.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you a little bit more soon if you're willing to come back and talk to us after the issue has been released. And
absolutely.
We'll keep in contact. And again, this has been Jason Eckers at SelfSufficientGardener.com. If you can, join his gardening club. I just did. And it's funny, right after we got off the conversation, I got my username and password. So I'm very excited that I'm going to be able to get on there and get this done. Amy,
great.
Are you on?
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Jason, so much. I learn new things every time I hear you speak, and we really, really appreciate everything you're doing to help the gardeners out there grow some food in a healthy, organic way, and we really appreciate your information. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Hey,
thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm going to put you on the spot. We've got an event in Hickory, North Carolina in September, and I'd love to give you a call privately sometime next week and see if I can convince you to come out there and speak in person.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. Well, I will do that. I will give you a call. So everybody,
great.
Jason Eckers from Self-Sufficient Gardener. Thank you, Jason. All right, guys, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll wrap the show up and talk about what's going on next week. So we'll talk to you in two.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci, and with me is Amy Alton, Nurse Amy. This last hour is brought to you by our friends at Backwoods Home Magazine. You know, Backwoods Home Magazine has been around for 23 years, giving readers advice and information in the self-reliant living lifestyle. And now you can own their anthologies for years 17, 18, and 19 for $50. That's $15.95 off the normal price. They're pre-order only. It closes at close of business tomorrow. And you can go to www.backwoodshome.com, and you'll see on the side a special offer for anthology 17, 18, and 19, years 17, 18, 19, and you'll be able to purchase them for $50. So thank you for Backwoods Home for 23 years of great experience and for you putting out this anthology. So, hey, Amy, what did you think about Jason?
Oh, my gosh. I want him as a neighbor. In fact, I want to buy property next to where he is.
In Kentucky? I don't know. I mean, it seems like you would probably have a hard time finding property next to him. He sounds like he has the perfect piece. I mean, right next to, you know, open range land, and he's got the lake nearby and everything else. And then on top of that, he probably wouldn't want either one of us as a neighbor because he'd be over there asking him questions all the time.
I would definitely be the nosy neighbor coming over and saying, "Hey, what are you doing? What did you do yesterday? What are you doing today?" teach me. Yeah. Everyone needs their privacy. I'll move somewhere else.
Right. Well, you know, the thing I like about doing this show and meeting people like Jason is here is another one of those fantastic success stories. Can you imagine, you know, here it is, 2009, you know, you're being told that you're being laid off. You know, you have your wife, you have your newborn son, and you look at your family and say, you know something, I'm going to start, you know, I'm not only going to become self-sufficient, but we're going to start documenting this, putting on a website, writing books, and everything else, and doing fairly well at it. And, you know, his name pops up all the time. I've read his website before. You even said that you were supposed to interview him at one point.
Yes. I don't know how we missed that, but we had scheduled, I think it was like last week, or no, 2 weeks ago, he was going to be our guest, and I guess he got really busy, and we got really busy, and we just sort of forgot about it, but he is absolutely going to be a guest as soon as I can get back in touch with him and arrange that, because I want to pick the brain, like you did with the chickens. You know, the gardening for me is just so incredibly interesting. I love every little detail. And, you know, if I can learn from someone who's been gardening since probably before they were born, I'm sure his mother went out, you know, and gardened when, you know, he was inside her belly. If you can use someone like that to help you prevent future mistakes, it's a wonderful thing. And I learned a lot when you were talking about the chickens, and I certainly hope to be able to have the chickens one day. And so I was writing notes while you guys were talking. It was wonderful.
Well, you know, something, as I'm new to this genre, not just, when I say genre, not just self-reliant living, but also the doing these podcasts/live radio shows, I get a really big kick out of, you know, getting to do the research prior to getting a guest on. And the fascinating thing about Jason is, you know, he's exactly the kind of podcaster I'd want to be. You know, if you listen to it, his stuff sounds very professional. You know, but when you actually listen to him talk and everything else, you can tell it just seems like just an ordinary country boy going out there and giving out his information, a little bit of humor, you know, a lot of fact, you know, and everything else. And so I would highly recommend anybody that hasn't been to theselfsufficientgardener.com and hasn't listened to one of his podcasts to definitely do it, because he does a very, very good job getting the information out there. In the world of crappy podcasts, it's nice to have one that it's done professionally. Myself included, being one of the crappy podcasts. We're still learning.
Oh, stop. So. No, you're very good. And the fact that you do the research before you speak to the guests really helps to pick out what pearls of wisdom that they can provide to your listeners. And that's very important, because you can just talk about general topics. But when you actually put your questions to their particular specialty, things that they've learned, mistakes that they've made, and things that they can teach your listeners, that's where you really get the great information.
Well, what I'm hoping we're doing is, you know, there's so much information out there. I mean, Amy, you guys do your show every week, and you guys have a new show that's going to be coming up fairly soon on another Adam's.
Natural News.
Thank
Mike
you.
Mike Adams.
Mike Adams.
No problem.
And, you know, no matter how many of these things you do, every time you go out there and start researching the next topic, I mean, just from talking today with Jason and with Kelly and Bishop, I've literally got 2 pages of paper front and back with notes on other people I should call and other ideas. Because you're throwing them out as you guys are having conversation, you're like, "Ooh, I never thought about that," and I'm hoping that, you know, what we're doing is the questions that you and I come up with for our individual shows are together, and you're doing this stuff are the same sorts of light bulbs that other people have, and we're answering the questions that they potentially can't get answered themselves. You know, you can only do so much with books and things like that, and I'm hoping we are asking the kind of questions that people want to hear us ask. Like frog gigging. Who knew that you didn't know what frog gigging was?
I have. that was so shocking to me. I mean, I consider myself a country girl, I have to tell you. I rode motorcycles. I climbed trees. I think there was probably 5 minutes out of 24 hours a day that I was actually clean. I can't believe I didn't know what the heck prom gigging was. And thank you for teaching me that. I feel enlightened.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the article come out next month's issue, because I really do. I get a big kick, you know, when we had this month's issue of Backwoods Home come out, the March-April issue, which was facts and fiction of apocalyptic scenarios. You know, I would go through the forums. I like the forum crawl, and pull out the little bits of information that are in there, and people going, ooh, I didn't know this. Ooh, I didn't know that. And then try to use those as topics of conversation on here. And I'm going to put you on the spot here, because we have about 10 minutes left and everything else. Because I meant to talk to this when we talked to you last time. In last month's issue, or this the current issue, it'll be next, the last month's issue here very shortly. You know, you and Joe actually had a full article inside there called Medicinal Uses for Garlic.
Garlic. Oh, I love garlic.
Now see, here's the funny thing is she really this wasn't pre-planned. She really didn't know I was gonna bring this up at the end of the
show. No, I didn't.
I'm a garlic person. I love garlic, let me tell you. Yeah. I can put garlic in just about anything and everything I eat. But you in that article actually had me turn my nose up at something and I couldn't imagine actually doing it. Garlic tea. You mentioned that there, you know, in one of your things that, you know, the speed up healing and everything else, you can make something called garlic tea and drink 3 to 4 cups of it, you know, either daily, warm or cold, you know, and everything else. And I was just like, oh, that just doesn't even sound, garlic on anything just sounds good. But the fact that someone would drink garlic tea, you know, it's definitely not someone I'd want to date. Yeah, tell me a little bit about why you would do this.
It's mostly about if you have a sore throat or you're just not feeling up to speed. If you really want to use garlic as an antibiotic, the absolute best way is to get fresh cloves of garlic, crush them, and immediately eat it. And the best way, of course, is with a spoonful of honey and just get it down. And then you can drink some water, maybe some lemon water after that to wash it down. But the garlic tea is, again, more for your throat. It's more of a soothing thing. Plus, it has some healing properties. But if you want the best boost in your immunity system, the fresh garlic, you can't beat it. But it's just another way to get it down. Not everybody wants to crush up a half a clove of garlic and put it in honey and swallow it. So it's just another method of getting it into your system. But it's not that bad, really. You think it's very garlicky. It's not terrible, especially when you flavor it with the lemon juice and some honey. It actually tastes good.
And you were also saying that it's decent on fungal infections.
Yes. Garlic oil. People have been known to use garlic oil for ear infections and also for I hate to say this on air, but if you have a vaginal infection, you can wrap up a clove of garlic in gauze and in emergency situations, you can place this inside for a few hours and then change it. But garlic is an antifungal. I mean, externally, it works as a great antifungal.
Yeah, and there's a lot of countries in Asia, in almost every herb garden or people's personal garden, there's garlic there. And I remember the first time I was talking to my partner over there and saying, wow, I know you guys use a lot of garlic. It just seems like everybody's got garlic. And the first thing he told me was, it's less for food and more for medicinal, you know, and he started rattling off, you know, you can use it for this, you can use it for that. And I was kind of like, oh, And so I had realized early on that garlic can be used for a lot of medicinal purposes. But until I actually read your article, you know, you kind of highlight how long it's been used and some of the things that were that you could actually use it for. I was very impressed with your research.
Thank you. It is one of the most amazing things. And I made a gardening mistake, and I planted hardneck garlic down here in South Florida, but we can only plant softneck garlic. So wherever you are, research what garlic grows best, and it's very easy to grow. You know, you just have to give it some nutrient-rich soil, some good drainage and good spacing, and, you know, plant the garlic. It's so easy. It does take months to grow. I'll tell you, we have to leave it in for about, again, depending on the variety, for 7 to 10 months it takes to grow it. So it's not something you're going to get harvested in 30 to 60 days. So if you think that you want some garlic, you know, get it in early. But it increases your immune system. So if you're starting to get sick, it'll help your body fight. It also is an antiviral. If you get that flu or cold, you know, there's really no antibiotic in the world that cures viruses. So natural is best in this instant. And go ahead and start getting some fresh garlic into your body.
Well, that's awesome. And how I meant to ask you, I should have asked Jason too, because I was going to try at one point to segue the garlic conversation of you being in the magazine too to that. Yeah, how does garlic do in winter? Is that something that you have to plant every year, or is it like some of these things that once you get in and it establishes itself, it'll naturally just go through the seasons and every year you'll get it?
No, unfortunately, you have to harvest it, and you have to, you know, eat some and save some. What you do is you save the biggest, your biggest bulbs, and, you know, just store them like you're storing, you know, the garlic in a dry, cool area, dark, so it doesn't start to germinate. But you have to get those into the ground every year. You've got to replant them. They're not perennials. So unfortunately, you've got to plant them, let them grow, harvest them, and then replant them again. But once you get that cycle going and you have some garlic that you know grows in your area, that can be an unending cycle.
Well, that would be good because, like I said, I absolutely love this stuff. And I know that when you look at all the medicinal purposes, I would highly recommend, if you guys haven't gotten the issue before it's gone, get the March-April issue, which is issue 134 of Backwoods Home Magazine. And we've been talking over weeks about the different information in there. But on page 48 and 49, Amy and Joe write an article on medicinal uses for garlic. They give a couple of recipes inside there and talk about the how to use garlic as a medicinal recipe and give some of the history. And it's a fantastic article.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's
garlic's good stuff. Oh, and it also helps reduce your cholesterol.
Well, I don't need that because everything I eat up here is high in cholesterol. So I'd probably have to, you know, eat an equal weight in garlic in order for it to balance out. Let me tell you, I like farm meals. I'm starting to like the gravy. I'm starting to like, you know. I'm getting into this farming lifestyle. I like the food.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, and I'm looking forward to some of this stuff popping up in the garden. I'm looking forward to canning season. Yeah, this will be our first season, hopefully, that we're going to grow enough that we can actually can. And believe me, if you guys like canning, in future episodes, you will definitely get a lot of people on here that we'll be interviewing on canning because, you know, this is not for education. This is for Bubba Da Vinci to personally figure out what the hell he's supposed to do. So.
And it is a, I'll tell you, canning is a learning curve. Oh boy, my first canning experience was, you know, I don't do anything small, and obviously you don't do anything in little experiments either. We go hog wild. So I got a whole huge case of tomatoes and canned tomatoes for 2 days. And you'll learn a lot of lessons when you go that big when you're in your first try.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right. we got to wrap this up. Let me go through all everything, everybody we have to give credit to. We want to thank, well, first of all, I'd love to thank the beautiful and wonderful Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, for co-hosting with me today. Thank you, Amy.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was wonderful. I hope I didn't step on your toes.
Oh, no, 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 no. I appreciated everything, and my testosterone levels are feel like they're rising, so I'm okay if I wasn't severely wounded. Why don't you plug your show and anything that you have coming up, your book?
Oh, tonight we have the beautiful and talented Donna Miller on.
I love Donna. I got to meet her in person and have a meal with her, and she's a wonderful person. So
yes.
I'll definitely tune in.
We're very excited. Last week we had Vicki Lynn Haycraft, and I believe that they're BFF, best friends forever.
Yeah, they're neighbors. Actually, I got to eat a meal with both of them. We went to Cracker Barrel with Vicki Lynn and Donna, and they are both wonderful women and superstars. And so,
all right.
Awesome.
I want an next time you do that, I want an invitation.
Well, actually, next time we do that, we may borrow your house and that's on the way. So.
Sounds great. Oh, the Gatlinburg house. Yeah, exactly. So Donna Miller is our guest tonight. So we'll be picking her brain. And, our book is The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook. And you can either get it on CreateSpace, which was where we published it. So they print a fresh copy for you. Or if you'd like, you can go to Amazon. And
wonderful.
Our website is doomandbloom.net. And we have, now I sound like a commercial, over 200 articles on, we generally talk about medical preparedness, but we also, as you can see, I love gardening. And we're master gardeners, so it's a big topic for me personally. And natural remedies also.
Awesome. And then want to thank our first guest, which was Kelleen Bishop. Kelleen from www.preparednesspro.com. She also has the website www.womenofcaliber.com, which specifically covers self-defense with handguns for women and everything else. And that was a fantastic conversation. We will be seeing Kelleen as part of our Women of Prepping panel session in May 18th and 19th in Colorado Springs. And she will also be teaching Rape Prevention for Couch Potatoes, which is a hands-on self-defense training class for young ladies and women. And we have $500 so far donated towards anybody that would like to attend the class and cannot do that. So that's 100 classes that we'll be able to do. The classes will have a donation of $5. We'll get the registration information up and the times for those classes up next week. So please participate. We all agree that we want you guys to be able to defend yourself and take care of yourself, so this is very important to us. And if you have time, please go to our website and either write a story or vote on stories for the Preparedness Outreach Contest. That can be found on the Preparedness Pro website on the left-hand nav. You'll see the bar for the contest, and you can click on that, read the stories, and vote, and it's some wonderful prizes there. So thank you, Kelleen, for joining us. And last but never least, Jason Akers, the Self-Sufficient Gardener, www.theselfsufficientgardener.com. Go to his website, listen to his episodes. If you feel the information is definitely worth it, click on the About the Gardening Club membership. It's $8 every 2 months. That's 13 cents a day. You'll get more information and more access to his episodes and everything else. It is fantastic. I did it. I promise I did, and I just got my link, and I'm going to hand it to my wife. And it's not because he confirmed that I was right about the hay. It's because the information is good. So you might have something to do about the hay. I don't know. But sorry. And then last but not least, we have to thank our sponsors, Backwoods Home Magazine. We have Humless. We have Inner Health. And we have Sun Oven. Without them, we wouldn't be here. For our info, go to www.backwoodshome.com. You can go to the selfrelianceexpo.com, find out about our future expos, and you can follow any of us on Facebook, Backwoods Home, Preparedness Radio, Self-Reliance Expo, Above Da Vinci, or Doom and Bloom. Actually, you know something? I'm going to stop there. Doom and Bloom. Do you have your own?
My own what?
Facebook page.
Yes. Well, we did it with just us. It's facebook.com/drbones and Nurse Amy.
That's why I can never find it. Last week we were going to try to plug it, and you jumped off when, after we got done talking. And, you know, I looked up Doom and Bloom, and I'm like, they have to have one here. And
there,
I
put it in the chat room.
Okay, then good. So we need to get it up there because, you know, it's a great show, and we want to make sure the people on Facebook, as we populate this stuff, are able to get it. I see your name pop up all the time on Facebook, but I you know, it's always, you know, you're always plugging the different shows that are coming up and things like that, and I never grabbed it, and I was like, well, I wonder why it's not coming up under Doom and Bloom, and it's because you guys did Doc Bone. I'm seeing it.
Yeah, we wanted more personal. We actually did a Doom and Bloom, but we just like the personal side instead of the commercial side.
No, so. that makes sense. All right, guys, so that's it. We will see you next week. Colorado Ron will be back. We'll be able to tease him about not spending time with his wife and having to get on the radio show. And we want to thank Amy for participating. We will see you next week, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.